Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ariel Helwani's MMA Show!
Back in your life on this Tuesday, May 28, 2019. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Yes, sometimes I have to pause ever so slightly when it's a special Tuesday edition of the program because that just doesn't feel very natural. It's usually Monday, but it's not Monday. It's Tuesday. We usually do two or so Tuesday episodes each and every year, usually right after Memorial Day and right after Labor Day. So this is one of those. We were off yesterday observing Memorial Day. Back today because we did not want to leave you hanging. We had a relatively quiet weekend in the world of mixed martial arts. No major UFC event this past weekend. We did have PFL on Thursday, but for the most part, it was pretty quiet. And I have to say, I enjoyed it. I liked the time off, if you will. I mean, it's never really time off, but nice to catch your breath. Look forward to the return to Sweden this Saturday. Watch my Raptors win on Saturday against the Milwaukee Bucks. Going to the NBA Finals, no big deal. Represent Canada, what's up? But other than that, now we turn our attention to what is shaping up to be a very interesting weekend and a busy weekend in the world of mixed martial arts. And that means we have a fun show planned for all of you. So I hope you didn't miss us too much because we'll make it up to you today. All right, let me run down the lineup and then we will get to our first guest of the day. At around 3:45, we're going to be joined by Max Holloway. Yes, Bless Holloway, Hawaii's own, Waianae's own, one of the most famous Raptor fans on the planet. He is fighting at UFC 240 on July 27th in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada against Frankie Edgar. And I do believe this is his first interview since losing to Dustin Poirier last month in Atlanta. He's on his way to Edmonton right now. And we're going to catch up with him upon landing. Also find out if he's actually going to go to Toronto for game one or two. So there's a lot to talk to Max about. Also, the title fight moving back down to 145. All those things and more we shall talk to Max about. At 3:30, we'll talk to Alexander the Mauler Gustafsson. He headlines the UFC's return to Stockholm, Sweden on Saturday against Anthony Smith. Get his thoughts on that. We'll also check in with Ally Quinta at 3:10 to talk about what happened against Donald Cerrone just a few weeks back, how he's feeling. I do believe this is his first interview as well since that loss. At 2:50, we're going to talk to the hooligan, Patty Houlihan, who made history over the weekend. And let me get this right because it's very confusing to normal Joe Schmoes like myself. He has been elected to the South Dublin County Council. He has won a seat over the weekend via the elections over there. Remember, he was on the show just a few weeks back talking about his foray into politics. Well, he won! The hooligan won! Patty Houlihan is actually a politician now. This is incredible stuff. So we'll check in with him and get his thoughts on all of that. At around 2:15, we're going to be joined in studio by Glover Teixeira, Connecticut's own Glover Teixeira. When I moved this show, I didn't really do it myself, but when they told me we were moving to Bristol, I said, you know what? We have to have Glover in studio because he's from Connecticut. This is great, or lives in Connecticut, so we'll have him in studio. Makwan Amirkhani will join us at around 1:55. He returns to action after a year layoff this Saturday as well. But first, let's not waste any more time. Let's say hello to the man who will be headlining the UFC's return to Stockholm, Sweden this weekend against Alexander Gustafsson. He is the man they call Lionheart. He is the one and only Anthony Smith, who joins us right now via the magic of FaceTime from Stockholm. Anthony, how are you?
I'm good, Ariel. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thank you for doing this. I appreciate it very much. I have been looking forward to talking to you for quite some time because of how our conversation went last time. And I actually feel like maybe you were a little bit, I don't know, I feel like you were a little bit upset at me afterwards because maybe you felt like I made too big of a deal of your comments, how you were feeling. I just want to say that I really appreciated your comments and I found them to be a breath of fresh air. And I give you a lot of respect for saying how you felt, much like the Rory McDonald situation of a couple weeks ago. So I felt like I needed to throw out that disclaimer right off the top. I hope you didn't feel like I was making a mountain out of a molehill, if you know what I mean.
No, I didn't feel, I wasn't upset. I wasn't upset at all. I think that when you go in depth about the things that I talked about and then you went on to talk about it, I think you were doing it from a place of caring. You know, I think that it was the other bullshit that, you know, like some of the other media people latch onto it, and then it turns into this, well, he's not ready, he shouldn't be fighting. Like, that's not it. You asked a question, and I've always been honest with you because you've always been good to me. You've never written or reported anything that I haven't said or twisted it. It's always been exactly how I've said it. So I've always been honest with you. I just think sometimes other people take it and they make it a bigger deal than what it was. I felt like we just had an honest conversation, and sometimes people don't like that, and sometimes it does get used against us.
I guess this is what happens sometimes in media, right? Because you give an honest answer, it turns into something, and then you say to yourself, maybe, well, maybe it just wasn't worth it. Maybe I should have just lied and not be honest, right? I feel like athletes go through that a lot. Is that what happened to you as well?
Yeah. And that's just not me. So then it turns into, well, Anthony Smith won't give me an interview. Well, every time I do, it gets thrown in my face for 2 months because I'm just trying to give you an honest answer. So, I mean, it's one thing to report what was said, but then to go into it in length and make a bunch of assumptions and, you know, try to rub this magic lamp and think that you have the answer. Like, I'm just take it for what it is and what I say it is and leave it at that.
Do you regret being that honest?
No, I don't care. It was more frustrating the bullshit that I heard come from it. You know, if it was just my face and your and I's conversation being replayed over and over and over, I would have no issue with it because I said what I said and it was in the context it was in. But it's the speculating and all the other stuff that comes along with it, which is, you know, I guess it's first world problems. You know, I'm complaining about something that most people would die for, but it's my world.
So here we are around 2 or so months later, around 2.5 months since we last spoke. How are you feeling? What's your mindset like going into this fight on Saturday?
I'm good. I feel really good. And that's honest. You know, I'm not just telling you that. If I wasn't feeling good, I'd tell you. I'm in a good place. You know, I think that by taking the fight and having to have a new focus and having to have a reason to work through it, I was able to get past that rough patch. And like I said, what happened, you know, 2 or 3 weeks later, I was ready to get back into camp and get this shitty feeling out of my stomach.
So is that how long it took for you to kind of get over the disappointment of that fight? 2 or 3 weeks?
No, I'm still disappointed. It still sucks and I still, you know, lose sleep over it, but it's not consuming my every thought of every day because I have a new focus and it's not Alexander Gustafsson. That hasn't been my focus. It's been focusing on myself and what I need to do to put in the performance that I know I'm capable of and that I should have done against John. And I plan on doing that versus Gus.
When you say that you lose sleep over it still, like what exactly are you losing sleep over?
The wasted moment, the walking out of there feeling like I still had more to give. You know, I said it 30 minutes ago, actually, that the Thiago Santos fight, I left Brazil with my head held high. You know, there were some circumstances of obviously the weight cut and all the other stuff that I was dealing with going into that fight. I didn't have a lot to give, but I gave it all, you know, like I left everything I had in that fight. And when I came home, I was obviously super disappointed and I was, you know, I was broke down, but I wasn't embarrassed and I wasn't, I think embarrassed is a good word. I'm really embarrassed with the John performance.
Are you not giving John, like, are you forgetting who John is? It's okay. Like you went the distance with John Jones and I don't think he embarrassed you per se. Maybe you're getting another call here. Yeah. Like do you not hold him to that standard? Because like not a lot of people go the distance with John Jones. Not a lot of people go 25 minutes. So is it just more that you just cared about yourself and you don't care who the opponent is? You just don't feel like you fought to your capabilities?
That's exactly it. I didn't fight anywhere close to what I'm capable of, and that's why it's so frustrating. I am so much better than that. And I was so much better than that for the entire training camp. It's not that John did anything that I wasn't expecting. There wasn't one thing he did that I was like, oh, whoa, I wasn't ready for that. I mean, he did everything I expected him to do, and he didn't do anything I wasn't ready for. That's what's frustrating, and I'm better than that. I'm way better than that, and that's what drives me crazy, that I didn't even give myself a shot at it. And, you know, that's what keeps me up. You know, I feel like I'm walking around naked all the time right now. It's the only way I can explain it. Like, I'm just embarrassed. Like, I feel like people look at me and they do that double take. And I'm like, oh, that guy knows that I lost. You know, it consumes me.
Have you allowed yourself to watch the fight yet?
Oh yeah. Several times.
Really? Why do you do that to yourself?
Yeah. 'Cause I deserve it.
What do you mean by that? You deserve the pain of watching it, the embarrassment?
Yeah, because I don't want to feel that again.
Okay. So
I got to remember what that feels like, you know, and I got to, it's the same reason that tweet is up still from Brazil. Like I go back to, I see that and I think of that, you know, I think the whole focus has changed for this fight. And I think that that's going to really make a difference. But I need to remember kind of where I was at not that long ago that got me here.
How has the focus changed?
Because it's not really about Gus, you know. It's not even really about winning or losing. It's not about getting back to the title. I mean, I'm not sitting here saying I don't want to win. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying I haven't even considered the fight in a win versus loss situation. Because honestly, I don't give a shit what happens. I just want to perform. I want to go in there and I need to destroy something to get this feeling out of my stomach, this burning, sick feeling that I can't shake. The only way I'm going to do that is I got to let it out on somebody. And I wasn't able to let that out on John, you know, I didn't. So I still have it. And, it wouldn't have mattered if it was Gus or any of the other 10 guys or 15 guys in the rankings. I don't give a shit. If I was on the regional scene, I'd have fought 2 weeks later. This is just where we're at now. You know, if you go back and look at my record, anytime that I've lost, I've almost fought immediately afterwards. Because I can't sit around with this feeling. It's just how I am.
So this is, according to the websites, usually they're maybe one or two off, but according to the websites, this will be your 46th pro fight. Is that an accurate number?
Sounds right.
Okay. Double-digit losses. You've been there before, 31 wins. I mean, you have fought them all. You've been everywhere. When you talk about this focus, when you talk about this feeling, is this new to you? Have you never felt this before in all your years?
Not to this length, not to this magnitude. It hasn't ever been this bad. But I think that it's just because of what was at stake and what I lost. You know, it wasn't just losing a fight and then we go on to the next one. Like, this is the moment that I've been trying to get to since I was 17 years old and I blew it. You know, I mean, I lost the fight, but I don't feel like it wasn't taken from me. I let it go. And that's why it hurts so bad. I didn't feel like he beat me. I let him beat me. And that's what's frustrating.
Do you think about the knee at all?
No, not really.
No regrets there?
No. No, I'm good with it.
Okay. You knew I was going to ask you about that one. Cause I still feel like you should have done it, but I respect you for not. There's not once where the moment, you know, like where you think about it, and you're like,
stop saying that.
Why? Why?
Because the interwebs just roast you for it.
I don't care.
Say it.
I don't care what they think. It's the truth. And guess what? They all would have done the same, and they're all liars for saying otherwise. All right. That was an illegal knee.
Sure.
You didn't do it. He did it. And guess what? In our sport, you're rewarded for illegal shots, and it's wrong. The warning in the back should be, I went through this whole spiel last time, but it's wrong. And here's the problem. The problem is that it's a problem that we even have this discussion, right? Like that it's taboo. In what other sport is an infraction taboo, right? On you, not on him. It's crazy. Oh, you should have honor. What do you mean honor? He's the one that did it. It's crazy. It's crazy. Anyway, you're a better man than I guess. And, I don't care what the trolls on the internet say. They could come get some, but all right. I appreciate the fact that you feel that way and that you're going to stick to your guns on that. Now, you start to transition and focus on Alex, you're fighting in enemy territory in a weird way. I kind of feel like this is like a nice, like you're just completely away from the American scene. Probably not a lot of friends and family coming to this one. Is this perfect for you in a sense?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like there's just no pressure. You know, we're kind of kicking it back to the old school. You know, you just come in, take a soul, grab a bag of cash and leave. And I perform better on the road. You know, I always have. I don't mind fighting out of the country. I don't mind fighting far away from home because it's just solely about fighting. You know, like the media doesn't give a shit about me here. This is the Gus show. This is the Gus show. And I'm okay with that. He's the one with the family and the friends and all his teammates and the whole damn city and country behind him. You know, he's the one that's got something to prove. The only thing I have to prove is to myself and, this isn't about the money. This isn't about the rankings. This isn't about the win. This isn't about the loss. This is about making myself feel better, with what I'm going to do to him in there. You know, if I go in there and I beat him for 25 minutes and beat the dog shit out of him, something crazy happens, and so be it. As long as I get that feeling out of my stomach, I'm good with it.
I'm happy that you broke it down like that, because actually someone asked me recently, what's at stake in this fight? And to be honest, I'm not really sure what is at stake in this fight. It's rare that the two guys who just fought for the belt are now fighting each other. And, you know, light heavyweight, there's a bunch of young guys coming up here. So I think it would be disingenuous to say a fight against John Jones is next for the winner. I don't think that that's on the table. But like the way you just broke it down to me is actually more intriguing than a title shot. Like you are doing this for yourself. You have your own reasons. And that's something that I think fans can get behind if it's broken. It's not your perfect little 60-second clip that the UFC is going to air and get people amped for, you know, the show on ESPN Plus. But that to me is real life. Like that's exactly why fighters fight. And so I think you just broke it down perfectly there. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No, and if there is, fuck them. Yeah. You know, like this is about me. This is 100% about me. Like I've been trying to, I don't like the John fight was about the title and making Michaela and my kids proud and making all the sacrifices they have made all these years worth it. And it was about being the first UFC champion at Factory X and the small town Nebraska kid, you know, showing everybody that it doesn't matter where you're from, it's about what you're made of, you know? And like this one is just, you know, obviously everything I do is for my family, but like this one's just for me. And like I just need to go in there and I just need to perform and I need to give the best performance that I can possibly give. And I truly believe that if I just focused on going in there and doing everything I can possibly do in every situation that arises to that I can't lose. Like, I don't think he can beat me. If I just go in there and I give the best performance and I just fight my ass off, Alexander Gustafsson can't beat me. He can't. And I don't care how many people think that that's bullshit and that I shouldn't be fighting because it's too soon and I'm not in the right mindset. I don't need to be in the right mindset. I need to be focused on myself. And that's what I'm doing. I just want to go in and I just want to fight. I want to punch him when I can punch him. I want to kick him when I can kick him. I want to drag him to the ground and punch and elbow everything that he gives me, and if he gets back up, I'll do it again. That's as deep as my game plan goes. That's honest. Like that's as deep as it gets for me.
When did you get to Sweden?
This morning.
Okay, so you don't really have a sense for, you know, the buzz in the area or people saying things to you on the street. I mean, you've been there just a few hours, right?
Yeah, a little bit. I went with one of my coaches and Michaela to go check out like the little city center area. And it's much different than the typical, you know, going in someone's backyard. Like, Swedish fans are pretty polite. Like,
yeah,
they'll fist bump you and ask you politely not to win. You know, like they've been pretty cool so far. So there's been no screaming or hollering or anything. You know, like, you know, lots of nice people.
Okay.
Lots of nice people.
I'm not surprised, and I'm glad to hear that. By the way, when one thing that struck a chord with me is when you talked about being away from your kids, when you initially had to, you know, start the training camp in Denver, what was that like? What did that do to you?
The first couple of weeks were tough. Just kind of feeling really selfish, to be honest, for the first couple of weeks. I was thinking, like, what the hell am I doing here? Like, why am I doing this to them again? And my answer every single time was, you're doing it for yourself. and then I immediately feel guilty. Like I'm making them sacrifice again because I feel like shit about myself. So I need to go and beat someone up to make myself feel better. You know, like when you break it down like that, it you feel like shit about it, but, they were super supportive and as they always are, you know, they're, it's almost like I don't deserve it. You know, like I hope that I'm doing the best I can to provide for my family and, you know, hopefully I'm making them really proud. But you know, it was tough. It was a tough first couple weeks. And then, you know, I started to get out of it and then we were able to schedule a week home and I flew in three training partners. And so I was able to do one of the weeks, at home.
Oh, wow.
So that was a nice breakup in the training camp to, you know, be able to sleep in my own bed and eat at home and get my kids off to school. And, you know, it was a nice breakup, you know, and I didn't miss anything. You know, I was able to bring those guys in and it was a great week of training.
Is that something that you typically do in the middle of training camp or was that unique to this particular training camp?
I haven't in a long time. Okay. I haven't in a long time. So it was really refreshing. You know, I felt like the timing was perfect too. I was almost getting to that point where I'm getting really frustrated and sick of the flying back and forth. And then I was able to come home and the training was phenomenal. It was a really hard grind. It was nice to have like those guys, you know, a couple blocks away where I put them up and then we just all go to practice and grind. It's the same grind. It was the same feeling as Denver. I just got to go home afterwards.
Would it be fair to say, regardless of what happens on Saturday, that you're probably going to take the rest of the year off?
Yeah. You know, I always talk about taking the break, but I never made the promise, you know, and before I was leaving to start this training camp, you know, it was the night before I was going to leave. And I was putting my kids to bed and, you know, you could tell they were just disappointed that I was leaving again. And I promised them, I never promised them that this was the last time for a while. I never actually said, I promise, you know, there's a lot of times where I've said, oh, this will probably be it for a little while, but I promised them and they made sure that I said those words. So I promised that I was going to take the entire summer and the entire nice weather months off. So, there's nothing you're going to be able to do to get me a break, that promise.
And by the way, just curious, since I think you might be the only one, maybe there's one other person out there, but off the top of my head, you might be the only one to have fought John Jones and Thiago Santos. Do you think Santos has a shot in July against him?
I do.
Really?
I do. He's fast. He's explosive. Well, I think you put Thiago Santos in there with an elephant, he's got a shot to put it down.
Yeah.
I mean, the dude is just crazy explosive and he's fast. There's no windup. I just think that John is really good in the grappling and the wrestling exchanges, and I think that, you know, clearly that's one of Thiago's holes, you know, and I just don't think that there's enough time for him to close that gap, and John is too smart to not take advantage of that. So I think that it's a tall task for Thiago, but he definitely has a chance, that's for sure.
I gotta say, man, you have become one of my favorite people to talk to in this sport just because of your honesty. Today is no different. And I sincerely hope that people appreciate just how honest you are with all of us because you don't have to be. I wish you the best. I really do. I hope it all works out on Saturday. And I love the way you broke it down, how this fight is for you and how the W or the L doesn't really matter. It's just about getting rid of that feeling from the last one. It's just beautiful stuff. And the sport is better because of people like you. And I think I've said that to you before. I really appreciate you doing this, Anthony. All the best to you this weekend. Enjoy the week in Sweden. And hopefully we get to talk to you afterwards before you go on a bit of a break for the rest of the year.
For sure, man. I really appreciate it. Make sure you catch me on Monday, because if you don't catch me Monday, I'll be gone.
All right. It's a deal. Thank you, Anthony. Good luck on Saturday. There he is, Lionheart, Anthony Smith. He meets Alexander Gustafsson on Saturday, ESPN Plus, the headliner. I mean, you could keep all your title shots. You could keep all your number one contender fights. Keep them all. Give me a fight with stakes like that. And it's true. Someone recently asked me, what is at stake in this fight? And I didn't really have an answer. I really didn't, because I don't think a title shot is at stake. But those stakes, I am all in. That's what I talk about when you talk about being emotionally invested in fighters and fights. It's about that stuff. It's not about violence and knockouts. It's about that right there. That's what I love about this sport. That's what I love about this show. Phenomenal stuff there from Anthony Smith. All right, another great story on the card Saturday is the return of Mr. Finland. Where have you been? Makwan Amirkani, where have you gone, Mr. Finland? There you are. We finally found you. It has been a year since we've seen you. And he returns to action Saturday against Chris Fishgold. Makwan, my friend, welcome back. How are you?
Hello. I'm all good, brother. How are you?
I'm doing great. Where have you been, my friend? It's been a year.
Yeah, it's been a year. I've been training. I've been training and I've been preparing myself. And I'm back. I'm happy. I'm happy to be back. It's a lovely thing to be back in action.
Okay, well, I remember talking to you around this time last year when you came back around this time last year, and I was talking to you about your year layoff, and now I feel like it's deja vu all over again because we're talking about the same thing. This time around, though, why did you take a year off?
Well, I wanted to focus on boxing. I did 6 amateur boxing fights, and I was training 10 months, just pure boxing, not a single day of MMA. Just 2 months before this fight, I started to mix MMA again, and I'm in a better shape than ever before, and I'm happy. That's the most important thing.
Wait a second. You took 6 amateur boxing fights since your last MMA fight?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You didn't publicize any of this, right?
I posted some of the clips.
Okay.
Actually, the first guy that I was fighting had 67 amateur fights, and the last guy who I fought had 160 amateur fights. But the guy who I lost the first fight, who had almost 70 fights, we had just before they announced this fight against Chris Fishgold. We took a new sparring session, and I KO'd him in second round, even though it was a sparring. But I got so much better than what it was like in the first fight. So I knew that I have been improving my boxing skills so much that I knew that this is the right time to get back.
So in those 6 amateur fights, what was your record?
4-2.
Okay.
I lost the first fight and the last one, but didn't take that many punches. It was just, you know, you saw that the other guy had the experience in boxing, so he knew how to take points. And yeah, but it was a good fight. Got a good experience.
Did you take these fights because you want to eventually move towards professional boxing, or did you feel as though your boxing just wasn't on par with your wrestling after your last win over Jason Knight last year and felt like this was the best way to improve it?
Well, it wasn't because of that fight. It just, you know, I was thinking that I knew how good my wrestling skills are, so I was thinking that how good I can actually be or how comfortable I can get if I can get my boxing level higher. And I feel really happy and comfortable at the moment.
Wow. Did you enjoy the process? Like, was there ever a part of you that said, I kind of like boxing better than MMA?
No. I know that my job is MMA.
Okay.
But I love boxing. I love the, you know, sweet science of boxing. I understand the, you know, to keep the distance with your opponent and, you know, keeping your hands high. And everything that I learned about boxing made me even better wrestler and grappler.
All right. So do you feel like you're going to be are we going to see a different Makwan Amirkani on Saturday as a result of this?
Oh, definitely. Actually, I changed a lot of things. I took all the unnecessary things in my life away, and I was just focusing on MMA and actually started to think that I'm a professional athlete and started to live that way. So I kind of wake up woke up in the early morning and went for a run, 1 hour of running. And after that, I went straight to the gym, and I was 3 to 5 hours in the gym. And in the evening, I had 2 hours of boxing, and I did this almost for 10 months. So, yeah, I feel like a professional athlete at the moment and never felt this good ever.
So when you talk about getting rid of some of the unnecessary things, can you give us some examples? What did you get rid of?
Started to say no to people, you know, started to be more selfish and started to understand why I call myself a pro fighter. Went to sleep early, woke up early. I ate like an athlete. Things like that.
Okay. Did you still train at SBG for this fight?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I went back like 2 months ago. And I told John Kavanagh that I said that I remember that I've been training just boxing so we can start easily. But I was catching up like really fast. And after 1 week, I said I'm ready to spar. And sparring went so good that John Kavanagh didn't have anything to say. He said, just it's perfect. Nothing to add.
Wow.
Just do what you are doing now. And he was like, I saw the face of John that, like he said, you're a new fighter. And I texted him. I said, what did you think about the sparring? And he said he has never seen somebody shutting down that guy that I was sparring ever before. Yeah, it was. Now I kind of understand, you know, the strength that I have and adding that, you know, with some boxing. Made my, you know, takedowns are much easier, effortless, and everything. And not just that, I started to understand that I'm not, you know, getting any younger than this, and I started to behave more well and be more positive, and that affected a lot of things, and just been smiling for 10 months now.
Any truth to the rumor that the guy that you sparred, that he talked about, that his name rhymes with Lonnar for Gregor?
No, actually, no, didn't spar with Conor, but he gave me good advices for this fight. And he actually, we were doing a session at the airport the day when I was flying away, he just came to the airport and gave me a bottle of Proper 12, and we were in a private room, and he just I love him. He's a really like a true brother to me, and not just him, the whole SBG team and the John Kevin and everybody was they were so supportive, and the whole country, Dublin, Ireland, I love them. And I actually found an apartment next to the gym, so it was so easy to me to be there. That 2 months went like this, and I'm happy that the first time I actually believe that I can be a really, really nasty opponent to everybody and everyone in my division.
Wow.
And I will prove that Saturday.
So wait a second, you're about to fly from Dublin to Stockholm, and you're at the airport, and all of a sudden Conor McGregor comes to the airport to give you a bottle. He goes from his home to the airport just to give you a bottle and toast you on your way out? That's incredible.
Yeah, and definitely. Even though, you know, he's a fighter, I'm a fighter, but, you know, when somebody has your back like that, and especially when we are talking about Conor McGregor, who is he is the king of this game, and he has, you know, he has lived the whole game higher than ever before. And so getting some advices and support from a person like that, that affected me a lot. And when I was, you know, in the plane, not just because of that, I was, like I told you, I was really positive the whole 10 months, and every training went like so smooth and perfectly, and all the sparrings were like, everything just went like in a dream, and that was like the perfect end for my camp. So when I came home, I was just, I was living in a dream, and now I'm here in Stockholm, and I actually been waiting for this moment so badly, so I can't wait.
Wow!
Until it's Saturday.
I'm very happy to see this. I'm very happy to hear this. It's amazing. You have been averaging one fight a year since 2015, so you haven't been very active, as we've talked about. Has that been okay for you? I mean, without prying too much, but like financially, you're how do you earn money? You fight, but you're fighting once a year. Is that tough on you, or are you okay?
Well, I'm not doing this because of the money. I started with wrestling when I was in the age of 5, and I never thought that this will, in the end, be my bread and butter. But I'm happy that I can, pay all my bills and focus on training, because, like I said, it's not anymore the money that makes me happy. Not the money, not the fame, not the women, nothing else than just succeed in UFC and get that belt. And I know that I haven't said these words before, but when you train 10 months around 8 hours in a day and you constantly think and focus on one thing, you start to believe in your dreams and your goals. So that's what I'm going through now.
This is amazing. Wow. It's like a new person in front of us. This is very
exciting.
Oh,
yeah, definitely. Yeah, it is. And like I said, like, it's been only a year since we talked, but when you spend time alone and you start to be a bit selfish and start to say no to people, to your friends, to your girlfriend, and you everybody, not your family, everybody, and you tell them that you have a goals now and you want to achieve them, so please just give me the space, let me work. So when I go to the gym, there is no, my phone is not next to me, nobody's calling me, and I was happy with that, and the results were growing so fast that I was just more happier and happier, and I've been just focusing on one thing, and that's why I see I actually like really believe that I can beat anybody from featherweight division, anybody.
Wow. Do you want to be more active after this fight?
Definitely. Like, I'm in a shape. I haven't had not a single injuries, nothing, not bruises, nothing. So I'm in the best shape of my life, and I'm getting better every day. So as soon as I finish this Fish Gold, I'm ready to fight again and really fast. And it doesn't matter who it is, I'm ready to fight anybody.
By the way, how's your mom doing?
My mom is great. My mom is really happy because I had my own apartment. I gave my apartment away. I moved back to my mom 10 months ago and told my mom that everything started from here. You remember when I broke my finger and I was, really down and nobody was there, and I told you that I'm going to try MMA one more time, and I was training for half a year. Then I got a call from UFC and now I'm here. I want to do the same thing. So I now went back to my mom. My mom was really happy when I was there. She saw me waking up every morning and going for a run. And when I came back, just a like really fast breakfast, and I went to the gym and I was there like 4 hours. I came back home, I ate and just packed my stuff and I left again. I have a dog that I love so much, but I gave my dog to my brother. I said, can you take care of my dog? Because when I'm focusing on MMA and my career, I don't have any space to anything else. So my brother and they took my dog. They are taking care of my dog. So I'm basically just, I was alone, and that was the best thing for me. And I knew that in the end, I'm fighting there in the cage. I'm alone. So I think it's the best way to, you know, learn to know yourself. And it was a right decision going back to my mother's place. And she is really happy and she knows in what kind of condition I am at the moment. So she will be there and she knows that there is only one way to end this fight and I'm going to finish him.
It's somewhat symbolic that this all happens now because I remember in 2015 you debuted in the UFC in Stockholm, 8-second knockout against Andy Ogle. That's when you bought your mom the bed, right? Is she still sleeping on that same bed?
Same bed.
And now here you are starting almost like this new chapter in your career in Stockholm again.
Exactly. It feels amazing. Sometimes it feels like things happen for a reason in your life and it's crazy when, you know, when you think and you constantly think about something and it actually happens and I don't see any way to that this can end in a bad way. So I just can't wait to enter that octagon and show my new skills, show that and prove the whole world that Mr. Finland is back. And I know that in Finland, when you walk in every street you walk, you ask, who is Mr. Finland? They know who am I? But I think that's that's not too much, you know, for me. I want the whole world to know me.
I know you've been very focused and you say that you're almost living like this selfish lifestyle, but I did see that you took some time out of your busy schedule to, I think it was Mrs. Finland or Miss Finland. You gave her a shout out. This became big news back home, right? Everyone was writing about how you kind of supported her, things like that. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. She's my girlfriend.
Oh, she's your girlfriend. I didn't read that. So I used Google Translate and I didn't see the part with his girlfriend.
Say goodbye for my single life. Thank you, Ariel.
I'm sorry, but it was, I mean, well done. I saw these articles. Good. It's great.
It's good.
Look at you.
She knows what I have been going through. She knows what kind of, mentality I have at the moment, how I have been focusing in my career at the moment and the past year, and she's been really supportive. We haven't done anything, you know, not even a movie. So when she is in this beauty contest, of course, with that support that I have gained from her, I want to give something back. Not because she's my girlfriend, but because she's a lovely person and a good person from her heart, and I learn a lot from her. So I think she has a big part of me being here at this shape.
Did she win the competition?
They just started.
Okay. Wow. So we might have Mr. Finland and Miss Finland both together. Oh, this is a power couple. Wow. If I've ever seen one. That's incredible. Well done, my friend. Well, everything is looking great for you. I'm so happy to see this. I'm so happy to hear this. I can't wait for your return. I'm really looking forward to this fight. Saturday, ESPN Plus, the return of Mr. Finland, a brand new Mr. Finland. Wow. Look at this man. Amazing. Against Chris Fishgold. Can't wait.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Makwan. All the best to you, my friend, and we'll talk to you after the fight, all right?
See you.
All right. There he is. Woo. Makwan Amirkhani. Brand new person, 6 amateur fights. Incredible. Who saw that coming? 2 great interviews to start the show. This is amazing. All right. There's the lineup right over there. As you can see it, some notable fights taking place on this card. It's UFC Fight Night, Gustafsson versus Smith. Main event, Alexander Gustafsson versus Anthony Smith. Volkan Ozdemir against Ilir Latifi. Jimmy Manua also on the card. Makwan Amirkhani. The list goes on and on. Daniel Taimur. It all starts 10 a.m. Eastern time on ESPN2. Main card 1 p.m. Eastern on ESPN+. So it's a Saturday afternoon card here in the United States from the Ericsson Globe Arena in Stockholm, Sweden. All right. This is a lot of fun. Speaking of the light heavyweight division, look who is here. Hey. My friend Glover. How are you, Glover?
I'm good.
Thank
I'm
you for
good.
Coming.
Thank you.
Please don't be shy. Come up to the microphone. Thank you so much for coming here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here.
So when we moved our show to Bristol, one of the first things I thought a couple months ago, I said, at some point I have to have Glover because you are Connecticut's own. You are the pride of Connecticut now. I know you're Brazilian as well, but you live not that far from here, right?
Yeah, right. 30 minutes away, my friend.
That's it.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So usually I feel bad for making people come to visit us, but in this case, I don't feel so bad.
I don't feel so bad. It's good.
Have you ever been to ESPN?
No, I've, of course, outside the building. Yeah, I see it, but never inside. This thing is crazy.
Yeah, it's like a university campus, right?
I know, it's crazy.
It's amazing. Yeah. So, you know, I was thinking of you when I was talking about Gustafsson and Smith. You fought Alexander Gustafsson a couple of years ago around this time in Sweden. What is that like to fight? Like Anthony was telling me earlier, we were talking to him about he's on the street and people are being very nice to him and telling him, like, please don't win, but they're not being rude, the Swedish people. What was it like for you fighting and Alex, in the lead up to the fight?
It's crazy. You know, the Swedish fans, they're amazing. They're amazing. They're very respectful. And they say the same thing. Hey, Glover, you know, I'm going to wish you win every other fight except this one, man. Yeah. You know, but, it's great. You know, they show a lot of respect. Even after the fight, I stay a couple of days and the respect they show me after was touching, you know. I felt good, you know. It's one of those times that you feel like, hey, man, being a fighter, winning, you're losing, you have that thing. When you're winning, you're the highest, the high.
Right.
When you're losing, you know, you just feel like the lowest of the low, right? But, you know, the passion of the fans come down and give that respect and thank you for the great fight. It was amazing.
Yeah, and so you talk about the ups and downs of the fight game. Now you're experiencing the highs, right?
Yeah,
you're feeling good these days.
I'm feeling good, yeah.
Yeah, at 39.
Good. Yes,
turning 40,
yes.
October 28th, same birthday as my daughter, by the way.
Oh, that's yeah? Yeah, good, good. That's a good birthday, yeah.
Did you expect this, like, towards your 40s, that you would still be doing what you're doing against these younger guys?
Yeah, I thought I was going to be one of those guys that fight, you know, just the fact that I got in UFC, I was 32 already, you
right.
know, so I say, you know, I got to make some history, some running, so I got to fight a little later, but, you know, take care of my body and, you know, change a lot of things in my life, and now with you know, just the UFC PI has been helping me so much with knowledge, you know, and tests and learning new stuff. And I think I could be doing this for a couple more years. Yeah.
I understand you were just at the PI last week, right?
Yes, yes.
What was it like? Yes. Was that your first time there?
No, that's my second time. I did it after my fight with Corey Anderson. I, you know, I stopped by and we run some tests and all crazy. You know, I was learning like I didn't know anything. And I started following the program, and I went over there to do another test, you know. And it was good. It was amazing because because I did it last year, so it was a year after, and how much I improved in those
really?
Tests was amazing. Yeah.
Okay.
And just by following the program, it's a little bit hard because, you know, you gotta follow. I'm not one of the guys that stay on the phone and not very techo, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, just follow something and see what's going on and not feel guilty, like don't go training. I'm not feeling guilty, you know, because I have this app now that measures everything.
Oh,
you know,
really?
They call the Omega.
They give you the app?
Yeah, called the Omega Wave. You kind of test your body, kind of test every morning before. And if you're, you know, in the red zone or yellow zone, you're close, you're overtrained. So it's okay to take a day off. And for that, you got to talk to your coaches and, you know, the coach, you also have to believe in that, you know,
right.
Have to believe in the app and really like, hey, man, and I'm giving it a shot. I'm giving it a shot and it's working. It's working. I love
it. So since you went there last year, you're undefeated, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I won the last two fights.
Yeah, do you feel
I felt
like there's a correlation.
I felt there was a great. Of course, it's not going to help heart. It's not going to help skills and fighting. But just the performance, the way to train, and because we thinking like, you know, I come from old school and I still doing old school stuff. I think old school need to be there. That's how fighter become. You know,
right.
A fighter, and the old school is sparring, the wrestling, but just to know your body and know how to train to be a fighter. You know, not doing this all crazy CrossFit. You know, and then go spar for five rounds. It's ridiculous, and that's how I kill my body, you know. It was a time, believe me, it was a time that I was like, I was doing a camp. Camp was so hard that I wanted to, I even told my wife, I can't wait to, I don't have to do this anymore.
Wow.
Because that's how camp was for me, because it's just like, you know, I train, and you went, okay. This is the train, 9:00 a.m., you know, 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. That's another train, and you have to follow the schedule. But, you know, doing this now is just like so much better. You know, I sleep better. I'm way more happy in camp, you know. I can do this for, I wish I knew this stuff a long really? Time ago.
So you don't have like an end, like, oh, 45, I want to be done, 42, I want to be done. You're just going to go as long as you can?
Yes, yes. I can't plan that. I just want to keep going, man. Yeah.
But back when you were telling your wife, oh, I can't wait till this is over, when did you think that?
It's just like a couple of years ago, you know, wow. Like when I fought Gustav, so I fought, you know, I think one of those times, like, it just like, it was so bad. That camp with Gustavsson was like, was a rough camp. Not, you know, nothing. It's just because I was training so much. And when I went to Sweden, the sleeping was bad. I mean, usually I'm pretty good with that, with the, you know, jet lag and everything, yeah, yeah. But like, it was bad. It was bad. That's why I was like, oh man, I sleep like 2-3 hours a night.
Wow.
For an athlete, is for a guy that's going to fight in a weekend, you sure. know, you sleep 3 hours is horrible. Yeah. And that's why I was like, hey man, this is when I'm pretty close to get done with camps, you know. Camps was stressing me out so much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But doing this stuff now at PI is just changed. It's changed the game for me.
So is it possible that if there was no PI, you'd be done by now?
Who knows, you know. Depends wow. how those fights go, you know.
Yeah. This is a great endorsement for the PI.
I believe it. I, you know, I appreciate them so much, man. I think it was a great thing that the UFC did it.
Yeah.
And, should I be closer to you?
Yeah, no, that's cool.
And it's just, I love it. I love it. I think it's going to be great for the young fighters.
I noticed that you saw Johnny Walker there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a youngster in the 205 division. Do you notice, like, is he, like, looking at you? I know you're both Brazilian, but is he looking at you like a lion looks at his prey? Like, did you feel like he was sizing you up? Because I wouldn't be surprised one of these days if you guys fight each other.
Yeah. You know, no, I think, you know, he was there. He was doing his tests. He, you know, he's a good guy, man. Amazing guy. I was giving him some, like, you know, my thoughts, you know, my advice, like, you know, he's 27 years old and keep doing what he's doing. And, you know, the guy is a great guy, great fighter, great athlete, you know. He's gone over there. He's like, you know, his test is like, I can't really see the other person's test, but
sure.
I hear his amazing thing about his test, you know. He's like, he's incredible.
Did you tell him when he celebrates to just calm down?
Yeah, I told him, yeah.
Chill out.
Only maybe celebrate before, if you ever fight me, you celebrate before the fight.
Yes, yes. in the cage. That was crazy. You saw that?
That was nuts. Yeah. Oh. He hurt his shoulder. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. He was there recovering.
Right, right. okay. So you were there, but as of right now, you don't have a fight. You just fought not that long ago. You don't have your next fight yet, right?
No. You know, little bit minus things. It was on my sciatic nerve. It was a little bit irritated. So I want to take some time, maybe a month, maybe 6 weeks to just do the training, you know, follow the PI program and get back to the 100%, you know.
Okay.
Like, that's learning. That's learning. That's like being careful, being smart right now.
Your story is an amazing one because I remember you lost your first pro fight. And then you ended up losing, I think, your fourth pro fight. So you were 2-2 to start your career. And then you won 20 in a row, yeah. right? And everyone was always talking about you, but you had the visa problem, right? Mm-hmm. So you couldn't, but you came to the U.S., correct me if I'm wrong, in 1999?
First, 1999.
Why did you initially come here?
Just to work, you know. I have a bunch of friends, that was living in Danbury at the time, Danbury, Connecticut. Yeah. And, you know,
of all places, why Danbury? You had friends that were already there?
I believe, yeah, a lot of friends in Danbury, a lot of Brazilians in Danbury because of the jobs, you know, the landscaping.
Yeah.
In the summertime, the winters get slow a little bit, but just Connecticut it's big, man. Connecticut.
For Brazilians.
For Brazil, for everybody. Connecticut is crazy. I mean, labor job, you know.
Yeah.
As right now, I know all my, if you need labor, just come talk to me. I have a bunch of friends that have landscaping, carpenter company. They have work everywhere.
Wow.
Like busy. So it's a place that they come to work because it's a lot of work around here.
Is it true that it took you 49 or so days to get from Brazil to Connecticut?
Yeah, it is true.
Well,
yeah.
Why did it take so long?
I had a cousin that was, he was bringing people, you know, to Mexico.
Okay.
And at that time I was 18 years old and he's like, Glove, you want to go with me? And I was like, yeah, I'll go with you. You know, it's like I go one of those trip with you, and I end up come with him, and of course come to stay. He say, I got a guy over there. He's gonna get you a job, and then we come. Yeah, we come to Mexico.
So initially you were going to Mexico.
Mexico? No, we went to Mexico, and we crossed the border of the.
Wow.
Because in my town, you know, where I'm from, everybody was coming already at that time. Like right now, it's much better, the visa situation for people.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, still chance you get denied, but it's so much better right now. Like 99, where if you from my hometown, Governador Valadares, it's almost impossible you're going to get a visa.
Wow. Why?
Because there's so many people here that was illegally from Valadares. They call Valadares.
What does that mean?
Well, dollar, yeah.
Oh, really?
Because there's so many people make a dollar over here, and but you know, so yeah.
Okay, so he told you to come to Mexico, and then from Mexico you came, or did you never even go to Mexico?
I went to Mexico, yeah.
Oh,
we cried. I stayed there in Tijuana for 13 days. We crossed the border. We stayed in San Diego.
How did you cross the border? Did you
walking, yeah.
Wow.
Walking.
How long did that take?
Maybe 5 hours, 4 or 5 hours.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Were you worried?
Not at that time, man. Like, you're 19 years old. You don't worry about not 18, 19. I was 19 at the time.
Middle of the night?
Middle of the night, yeah.
Wow.
I was having fun, you know, like, yeah, man. This is the United States. I mean, it was like, we about like, maybe, I don't know, 12, 15 people.
Everyone goes together.
Yeah, everybody go, yeah. And if we're lucky, you know, we just cross the border. It was,
sure.
It was nice, but like if the guys come, so we have to spread. That's when it's dangerous.
Yeah.
Because, if the cops come, or the immigration, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
people run. So the guy, they'll take you. They call them the coyote. He'll run away because he don't want to get caught.
Sure.
And you have to find your way.
Oh my
pretty God. Much in the desert, so you don't know. It's
that's scary,
it's dangerous,
man.
Yeah.
Wow. You weren't worried about this?
I was, you know, no.
I was a teenager. And did you have your family back home in Brazil?
Yes, everybody was there.
Your parents?
Yeah, I didn't call them for like 40 days or something.
Really?
Yeah.
Were they worried about you?
They were worried, yeah.
None of them
of course,
came with
everybody
you?
Got worried because, you know, we hear horrible stories too, like, when it was 2001, things start getting crazy. So people stopped coming to Mexico, I believe. They still do, but it was very popular in 2099. But after it was getting dangerous because of the drug dealers, you know, the cartels start like actually, you know, getting people, make those people like some slave. It was little crazy stories going on. So people stopped doing it.
And your family didn't want to come with you?
Oh, no, they didn't come. No.
Are they still there?
They still there, yeah.
All of them?
Some of them come, my sister come visit, but they, you know, they already went back and they come work a little bit and they went back.
So from San Diego, how did you get to Connecticut?
Just getting a plane, like,
getting
to San Diego, yeah, they don't ask for.
Sure.
I mean, when you're in the United
in America,
States,
yeah.
You know, yeah.
And then, so your first job here was landscaping.
Landscaping, yeah.
And what kind of stuff did you do?
Just landscape construction, man. Planting, pine trees.
You know anything about that, or
yeah.
You just kind of did it?
No, I didn't know anything about it, but, you know, it's not, when you first get here, they just give you a shovel and say, hey, dig holes.
Go ahead.
So, yeah, it's not much to it.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I love it. I love it outside working, you know, I grew up in a farm. I grew up doing this stuff my whole life. So for me, it was like, and trying to find the gym, the jiu-jitsu gym. And I thought it was like a little weird. The guys grabbing each other. And my friend's like, you don't know what jiu-jitsu is, huh? I'll show you. He actually looked like you a little bit.
Really? Wow.
He showed me. He's like, let me show it to you. He went to Blockbuster. And we rent a tape, first UFC, UFC 1, 2, and 3. I was like,
wow.
Next day, I sign up in the gym.
Wow. So you had no prior martial arts experience?
No.
Didn't do anything?
I never.
Boxing, done. Nothing?
Nothing. I grew up in a farm, man. I mean, where I grew up was no...
I heard there was just one stoplight, right?
No stoplight.
Zero stoplight.
Still no. It's still my town. Is no stoplight, no signal,
come on.
Nothing. Yeah.
How many people live there, approximate?
In the town, maybe 2,000, maybe 2,000.
Not a single stoplight?
No, there's no stoplight. It's
that's
just,
wild.
Yeah.
Where is it in Brazil? Like, what's the nearest big city?
Big city? Belo Horizonte, Valadares, you know, where I fought Ryan Bader.
Yeah,
it's like 3 hours away.
Okay, so is that the north?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's Minas Gerais. It's like state close to Rio de Janeiro, you know.
Okay.
I can show you later the map.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, so yeah. You get
inland.
So you watch the tapes and your mind is blown.
Yeah, I was like, I gotta learn that, man. I gotta learn that. So I saw, you know, seeing every, back then was difficult, you know, it was like not, you know, no YouTube or anything, but yeah. I started looking all the videos about Rickson Gracie and, you know, about jiu-jitsu, learning all this thing. Cause I was a big fan of martial arts, but, you know, Mike Tyson, and yeah. I was like, oh, I wanna box, I wanna, and then I watched this, so it changed my whole, I would say, I wanna be a UFC fighter.
So when you go and start training, what is it like at first? Like, are you kind of blown away by how difficult it is?
Yes. I was blown away to how difficult it was, but I was like a very excited and proud, kind of like the way I trained. I went to this guy. This guy was like, he was purple belt in jiu-jitsu, and he was like, oh, I've been training for 8 years. And I was like, 8 years, man, it's crazy, you know. And then I trained with him. I was about 255, 260. And, you know, like, just did very good, you know. Of course, I got my back a couple of times.
Yeah.
But the way he was like, oh, my God, he was dead tired, too. And I was like, yeah, man, I give you a run for your money. You know, he was about 180 pounds. And I say, yeah, I want to learn this thing, man. I want to learn. And jiu-jitsu is just, never really trained jiu-jitsu that much. It just come to me so naturally.
So at what point do you go from that guy who's just training to saying to yourself, like, I actually want to be a pro fighter?
Right there, man.
Right away.
Yeah, soon there, I wanted to be in the UFC. That's why my first fight, you look at my record, my first fight is in 2002.
Yeah.
June 2002. The first time I joined the gym was, December 2001.
Oh my.
So, well, I had six months. I wanted to be gone. I wanted to fight. And of course, didn't go well in 6 months, but, and then end up training a couple more years, and that's when I met John Hackman, right, too, because I fought one of his guys.
But when you lost your pro debut, did you have doubts? Did you say to yourself, maybe this isn't for me after all?
Not at that time. Not
no?
at that time. I just felt like I felt really tired. Really tired, you know, I was like dead tired, and you know, and I did actually pretty good. I was aggressive, I was nervous, you know, pick the guy up, take him down, but this is Division I wrestler, it's Eric Schwartz. You can,
yeah.
This guy was like the Chocolate Dell main training partners.
Okay.
And he is like a badass. The guys I train with him to this day, he's still like, I was like, I can't believe, like, I was at 6 months, I could take you down that time.
You still train with the guy?
Yeah, I was training with him back later on, because I went to train with John Hackman.
Yeah.
So because John saw the fight, and he called the guy that set the fight with, Greg Davis. He's like, hey, this kid's like, he have a heart of a lion. He have a chin too, because the guy was hitting me with everything he got. So John's like, hey, send him over here, and I'm going to train him.
Wow. Oh, so it was after your first pro fight that John said that. Oh,
yes.
I didn't realize it was the first pro fight.
Yes.
Wow.
That's why I met him in Chalk.
And you went to California.
I went to California the next year, yeah.
Okay. Now, does John still corner you? Like, was he in your corner for the last fight?
Yes.
He was there. Okay.
Yes.
Because I know he's trying to phase out. He doesn't really want to do it anymore.
Yeah, you know, John, he likes to chill at home.
Yes, he gets nervous, but, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'll do it for me. You
right.
know,
I feel like you're one of his last guys, right?
Oh, we have a couple guys, like Big Brother is coming up. You know, he's one of the guy, the kid that I used to teach when he was like 8 years old.
Wow.
I mean, and he started with Johnny when he was three.
Okay.
So we call it the Little Dragon class. And now he's like, he just did his pro debut. He fought a kid 13 pounds, a pound heavier than him, and knocked him out.
What's his name?
Isaiah Rocha, but we call him Big Brother.
Okay.
Cause it was him and his little brother.
Okay.
So that's his nickname for us, Big Brother. Keep an eye on him.
Okay.
This kid's gonna be, he's gonna go far. I have no doubt of that.
Really? Okay.
He's probably gonna fight 135, 145, but.
Okay.
He's
we'll
good.
Remember,
he's
when
good.
He becomes a champion, we'll say you said it.
No, no, he mentioned my name. I used to train with him when he was a kid, man. It's amazing to see this, you know.
The little kids that you were training with.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Now,
it's amazing.
They're pros.
Yeah.
So you're doing okay. You're in the States, but then at some point you have to go back because you had a visa issue, right? So what happened?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I start winning fight. I beat Sakujo, you know, with that fight. Dana White was there.
He was.
Yes, he was there when I knocked out Sakujo. Chuck jumped in, you know, in the cage and saved. Because, funny, because Chuck told him, like, hey, watch this. My friend's fighting next. My jiu-jitsu guys is fighting next. And I knock out Sakujo, you know, was a great. You saw the fight was a good stand-up fight. And then I say, oh, this is the jiu-jitsu guys. And Chuck jumping up. He's like, yeah, that's the jiu-jitsu guy. So I told Dan, I want to fight in UFC. And he said, he's like, get you together, we're gonna put you in, you know. So that's when I was like, I called the lawyer and everything, and because things that you've done in the past, right? You know, the wrong stuff. I had to go to Brazil and
because you didn't have a proper visa, right?
Yes, because I come here illegally, so I had to set that with the law, and I did. I'm happy I did it. You know, I went there. I know, apologize. They send me a letter. I pay a fee I play the waiting game.
Okay. So at this point, you actually met your future wife, or were you married?
I was already married. Yeah.
And she's from Connecticut.
Yeah. She's from Denver.
You had to leave her for what, like 3 years?
3 years, three and a half.
That wasn't hard?
That was very hard. Everything. Yeah. It was very hard, man.
This
it was the point that
FaceTime and all
to
that.
To be
right?
honest, everything that happens in my life, that's the hardest thing. That's the hardest part of my life was there. In Brazil, because, you know, coming over here, like I say, I was 18, 19 years old, you know, I didn't care, man, I was just having fun, you know, like, and then come over here working, didn't care, like, all right, you know, I'm just gonna go back to Brazil, make some money here, go back to Brazil, live my life as a, you know, cowboy there, but then, like, you know, get back to the fight, whatever, you know, lost the first fight, anything. But when I went back to Brazil and I struggled so much that I was like, hey, man, maybe this is not what I meant to do, you know, like, fighting, because I mean, and this is me training with, like, I train with Junior dos Santos, I train with Lyoto, I was training with the top contender, top fighters, and before I trained with Chuck Liddell, so I knew how good I was, you know, I'm not talking about, you know, I'm not beating them, but I was doing toe to toe with those guys, the champions. And I was like, well, maybe it's not meant to be, you know, it's get to a point that, like, I win Abu Dhabi in Brazil, and that was, like, the point that I thought, like, hey, maybe I stop with this, you know, go back to my hometown. And Pedro Rizzo was there and say, hey, man, you just got to fight everybody. Let's fight everybody. They're going to call you. We put 200 fights over here. They're going to call you. You're going to beat everyone. So I start fighting everybody.
Wow.
And funny about this is Chuck told me a long time ago, I remember asking Chuck, one of the fights, right? I don't know what fight. Chuck, you think I should take this fight? Oh yeah, it was George Oliveira. Was after I fought Sakujo, you know, my reputation went up because Sakujo was knocking out Arona and Lina. Yeah. So I asked Chuck this. I say, hey Chuck, you think I should fight this guy? I mean, I'm right now, I'm in a hype, I'm waiting for UFC, you know. He's like, you gotta fight that. You gotta fight everybody. Because if you can't beat that guy, what are you gonna do in UFC anyway?
Right.
So that was the main, you know, that's all I need to hear. And it's funny because in August 2011, I got my approval from the visa.
Okay.
For the green card.
Right.
So say, in November, you're gonna have your green card. It's already done.
Wow.
You're approved.
Wow.
So all you have to do is go to, you know, the consulate and get it.
Yeah.
And I took a fight after that. And I had, and that's all the winning. I knew I had the contract with UFC. I knew because Ed Soares told me, like, hey, we're good.
Wow.
You come here, get your things together, we're gonna get in UFC. And I took a fight with Rico Rodriguez. And people thought I was crazy. And that I told the same thing. I was like, if I can beat, it's nothing against Rico at that time, great fighter, you know, was amazing to fight him. But at that time, I say, if I can't beat Rico right now, I'm not ready for UFC. So let's do this.
And it worked out.
Yeah.
What was it like when you got the letter for the first time, when you saw that you got the green card?
It was just, you know, after that, man, it was just things going on. I knew
that must have been incredible feeling, right?
It was incredible feeling.
Did you see your wife for that? So you were away for 3 years?
No. She was visiting me once in a while. She comes to Brazil once in a while.
You didn't have, like, there was no FaceTime or anything like that, so it must have been hard to
see. We had Skype back then.
Man, that must have been so. But you went on a roll. That's when you went and killed everyone. Like, that's when you went, you won the 20 in a row.
Yes. I was fighting everybody. I had like fights, like line up, like every 2 weeks. I had a fight with Marcel and Marvin Isma 2 weeks after there. Yeah. Marcel Cruz, you know, just everybody.
I remember it was such a big deal when we finally got the word that you were going to come to the UFC after all this time, because it always seemed like, man, like, is Glover going to get a chance? And if he doesn't get a chance, it'll be like one of those what if stories in the sport. Like, how good could he have been? Yeah, right? We didn't know the answer. Yeah. Did you worry that you would, that at some point, did you lose hope that the government wouldn't give you the green card, that you'd have to stay there? Or did you always feel, are you a pretty positive guy that at some point it would work out?
Well, I had a different, was a little bit different mindset. It was like, was a point of weakness. Yeah. It was a point that, like, I'm very positive. I'm very strong. You know, but I had a point that I have my weak moments, you know, that I have to sit next to a bottle of whiskey and we call cachaça in Brazil, you know, and drink it down with the friends and, like, you know, and let it out.
Yes.
Yeah. Let it out. And, like, you know, that's, like, for me is a weakness, you know, that was the fourth year, I believe, you know, the fourth year. Then I got my things together. So, you know, I gotta do it. I gotta train. I gotta keep fighting. It was a little weird story because in 2008, I got the letter 2008 to go in Brazil in July 2008. And now I had the hope, like, you know what? If I can get back to the United States for a while, I can fight in Pride. But Pride was last fight. It was last Pride in 2008. Remember?
Yes, of course.
They end Pride in 2008.
Yeah.
I was like, no chance of me fighting a bigger show, you know?
That's right.
So.
But it all worked out. When you first got to the UFC that first time, what was that like?
I was actually, I'm a comfortable guy. I'm like very relaxed guys. I don't know if John Hackman would tell you that. I'm very, very calm in the locker room. I'm chill, you know? But I was nervous that I was going to be nervous. I was excited. Oh man, am I going to be nervous first time I walk out, you know? But I was just a great feeling, man. I remember I felt like it was like my foot was 3:30 in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And I walking out and there was very few people because it was the first fight, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But Brazil, right? But that was like, I was so pumped.
Really?
It looked like that when I, you know what I mean? Like the first fight, there was not many people around. It was just some few Brazilians there. Come on, Glover.
Yeah.
I was so pumped. It feels like it was like packed arena, you know?
Yeah. So you weren't nervous at all?
No, I was just like, oh man, this is my time. I'm gonna go for the kill.
And you looked amazing in that fight and in the early run. I remember, I think it was UFC 160 when Mike Tyson was there.
Yeah.
That was amazing, right? What a moment that was. It felt like everything was coming together for you.
Yeah.
In that moment.
I watched Mike Tyson highlights, usually a night after the fight, before the fight or.
Really? He's
or the
guy.
Day of the fight. I just watched the highlights video, you know, just to see the killer, you know, just like,
What was it about him that you loved so much?
Just the killer instinct, the killer mentality. He's a fighter, you know. And of course, everybody likes Mike Tyson because he's a fighter, you know, he's an excited fighter. He's not, I wouldn't agree. He is definitely one of the best of all times, but, maybe not technical the best of all time, but definitely the most excited. If you have to see one fight, Muhammad Ali or this, so if you have to go back in time and see one fight, most of the time we see Mike Tyson because he just know which is going to bring it to the ring. So that's my mentality too, like, you know, even though now I gotta be smart and I gotta move, but that was my mentality for a while. Just go. And I learn with time. MMA is a little bit different. So I gotta be more cautious with the knees, uppercuts and stuff. But, that was my mentality. It still is, you know, just go for kill. It's like, I have one of the most finish in UFC because I go to finish every fight. No matter who.
Fan-friendly style. The fans like to watch that style.
Yeah. They love it. Yeah.
But over time, you do have to evolve a little bit because you don't want to take too much damage, right? Especially as you get a little...
Yeah, of course. You know, that's what it's still that mentality to learn to kill, but not just go, learning how to step back, step sideways. Right. Those things that I can... Because I have that mentality to go forward. And watching the fight with Gustafsson, with John Jones, I learned that. I keep going forward. And getting outpointed, eventually those punches gonna get to you. I broke my nose, it cuts, eyes, you can't see anymore. And you keep wanna go, but now I'm working more in timing and explosion to get inside, not just one pace.
Right.
I watched that fight and I was like, oh, I can't believe, man.
Which one? Jones fight?
Yeah, Jones or Gustafsson, he did that. Who knows, I don't know if it changes anything. I'm just saying that, it's kind of like it's so frustrating, because I watched the fight and if I was cornering myself, I'd be like, what the hell are you doing? Let's move out. Let's try to counter this guy with something, not just give him everything,
Right. I saw recently that you took a picture with Rashad Evans.
Yeah.
And you fought him. You knocked him out. You know Chuck. There's always it's very hard for fighters to know when to say when, right? Like to know when to walk away.
Yeah.
Are you cognizant of this? Like when you saw what happened to Chuck against Tito, that wasn't the old Chuck Liddell, right?
Yeah.
It was hard to watch.
Yes.
Is this something you think about a lot?
Yes. Yes. I mean, I don't want to – nobody – wants to be past the point in a fight. I think, Chuck, I was upset because he fought Tito,
Yeah.
And he lost for Tito, But he beat him in his prime. I think, everybody knows who was the best, Right now is right now, man. Chuck is 49 right now. Yeah. He's like, he shouldn't be fighting anymore.
Right.
But, go tell him there, right? He's gonna be pissed at you or something. It's hard. It's hard to say to somebody, don't stop. But I'm open to listen to my coaches. Of course, my coaches. I'm gonna look in Instagram and look haters say whatever they say. Of course, we gotta look at the people that is around you. That's why I have John Hackman, Finelli, and good friends. They're gonna sit down with me. If I'm not doing it myself, it's come to a point that I have to say, hey man, I have to sit back and maybe not fight anymore. When this time comes, when this time they're like, I still go in the gym, man. I still train like, with the 25, 19, 18 years old kids. They students, I'm not, technique wise, of course, but I'm talking about the conditioning wise.
Right.
I'm going with those guys, man.
I bet.
And working hard and I feel good about it. So I'm not, and the week of the fight, the adrenaline, you're going to fight this young guy, like my last fight, the 25 years old. What do you think? Well, all these things. And I'm thinking, and I just, it feels good. I say, I'm going to show him what he's all about. I have to teach him a lesson.
Yeah.
This and that, playing around.
Sure.
I'm the old guys. I'm going to show him, the skills. I'm going to show, but like, it's just, I still feel it. It's
yeah.
Feel good, I guess the days that injuries and I can't do it anymore that's the time that I, and my coach is probably going to see that too.
Right.
They have to see it. I would say to a friend of mine or a student of mine that, hey man, I think we need to figure out time to call it.
And when it's done, you just go back to landscaping.
I have my gym right now, man. I'm very excited.
Where's the gym
in Danbury? Yeah.
In Danbury, okay, yeah. So not too
I'm
far
very
from
excited.
Here. Because I heard after your last fight, you invited ESPN to come train at your gym, right?
Yes, right there.
Everyone's allowed.
Right, everyone's allowed.
Invited.
Everyone's invited.
What is it called?
Know?
It's called Teixeira MMA and Fitness.
Teixeira MMA and Fitness.
Perfect.
Danbury. It's a battle, Connecticut, actually. It's
okay.
Right there on the border.
All right.
But, the gym is great. I'm excited for that new chapter, like I say,
yeah.
Teaching the kids, see like a guy like Big Brother to become, first debut, who knows, what's happening, but this kid, I only see him be in UFC very soon, and I wanted to do that with the kids around here in Danbury. And if you stick around, we're going to bring all those guys over here.
Perfect. Yeah. That'd be great. Before it's all said and done, you want that rematch against John Jones? Is that the goal? Is that the dream?
Yeah, rematch is always. I always want a rematch, man. I look in all
no
the fighters.
No eye pokes this time. No eye pokes this time.
No eye poke. You know, I got to move my head.
Sure.
But like I said, that's one of those things too. Like that coming forward, you know, and those guys, they put their hands out there. They tall, so they know. To be honest. John Jones poked me a couple of times. Gustavus was the worst, though. John Jones poked me more time, but Gustavus, I couldn't really see. I really thought I was going to get knocked out in the second round.
Wow.
I mean, right after because the ref was like, you don't have 5 minutes. I thought I had 5 minutes.
Right.
And he's like, you got to go. Either you go or you call the fight. I don't know if you see, if you heard, I say, Of course I'm going to go. I'm not going to. Have no contest fight and say I can't go. Of course I go. I go without C. I go, you know, it's like, especially I feel like I owe to the fans, man. I feel like I owe to everybody, for UFC people, nothing that I feel like, hey, I'm going to do this so I can keep my job. I can care less about that.
Right.
I just like, I'm a fighter, you know. I got poked in the eye, and the guy is like, I couldn't see nothing. You can see my eyes. And it's funny because the other eye, for some reason, I was blinking this one so much, I couldn't see the other one either.
Wow.
So I was like, I can't see. And the guy said, you don't have 5 minutes. If you can't go, we're going to call in whatever. I say, of course I go. I'm not going to stop the fight here. Good to go. I'm still standing. So.
Wow.
I got knocked out later on, but was not for the eye poke. So ended up, I was able to manage, but, those guys are tall. So somebody come close, I'll do that myself. Somebody, come close. I move my hand out there, and because I come steady forward, and then I keep getting poked in the eye.
That's why you got to move the head.
You gotta move your head and you gotta take your time.
Right.
Take your time. Watch those guys take the time and be explosive in the right time.
By the way, I wanted to ask you before I let you go. I saw a photo, I think yesterday you posted, you were having acai. I think the acai in America is horrible. It's not like in Brazil.
No, no.
It's nothing like Bibi Sucos and all these places over there on the beach. Where do you get your acai? Do you make it yourself?
This one is very good, though.
Where is it?
It's a store that we have in Danbury, Connecticut.
Yeah.
It's very good.
It's good. It's like in Brazil.
Roadback, I think. Yeah.
It's like Brazil or?
Almost like. They're almost. Very good. Brazil, the thing is, it's like Rio de Janeiro.
Yes.
If you get açaí BB Rio, and you get in Belém, is different.
Oh, really?
Oh, different.
Oh, wow.
In Belém, you get the pure açaí. So that acai, if you like sweet stuff, this one is kind of like a cheating meal dessert kind of thing because a lot of sugar. It's good for
Guaraná, right? The Guaraná.
Yeah, but see the Guaraná powder and the acai powder, they come from Amazonas, Belém, Amazon. So if you go there to get your acai, that's when you get the pure acai. Yeah. They eat acai actually with fish.
Oh my!
Lunchtime with salt.
Oh,
they put it with, because acai is very bitter.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of bitter. You get used with the taste. You like it.
Okay.
Because I like kind of like bitter taste a little bit.
Okay.
But it's not like BB Sucos.
I like the sugary.
Yeah, sweet. You like the sugary one.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
My mouth is watering just talking about
it. Yeah, yeah. No, if you go to this place, it's a good place. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I really appreciate you coming.
Hey, thank you, man.
This has been a pleasure, my friend. Yeah, wow. You have huge hands, by the way. I don't know if everyone's ever told you that. So get well soon. Thank you for making the trek. And later this year, we'll see you back.
Yes, yes.
That's the plan.
For sure, for sure. That's what my plan is, to focus on that so I can fight later on this year.
Okay.
Maybe before I turn 40.
That would be nice. Okay, before October 28th. I won't forget your birthday. There he is, one of the top contenders at 205. Glover Teixeira. There's the resume right over there. Thank you so much, Glover. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it, guys.
They'll walk you out right over there. And safe travels home, my friend.
All right.
The one and only Glover Teixeira stopping by.
I'll bring you some shirt, man, next time.
No problem, yes. And we'll come train.
I'll bring you some. I forgot. When I was on the road,
No problem. Don't worry about it. We know where you are. Glover Teixeira, the one and only, stopping by. So nice to have guests in studio here. Where's my ad read? Oh, it's on my computer. Is it not? Yes. I thought Corporate Jake was going to write it or send it to me printed. Oh, it's actually sitting at the printer. I wonder if that's helpful to me at this exact moment.
I thought it would be.
All right. Let me tell you about our good friends over at Vivid Seats. Oh, my man over here is hooking me up. Thank you so much. Oh, Corporate Jake, thanks for the small font. Let me see if
you're welcome.
Got my magnifying glass here. As you all know, we love a good night out. Whether it's seeing our favorite band in person or being there in the crowd to cheer on our favorite team. Like my Toronto Raptors, who have made the NBA Finals for the first time in their 24-year history. Did I tell you all that I'm going to be at Game 1 for Hoopstream's Jurassic Park? Here I come. The prodigal son coming home. Anyway, with Vivid Seats, you can attend the concert, show, or sporting event of your choice at a great price. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all the live events you want to go to. You can sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice. To make things even better, Vivid Seats is giving listeners an exclusive promo code for new customers to receive 10% off your first ticket order to save even more money. So go to the App Store or Google Play right now and download the Vivid Seats app. First-time customers can use the promo code KNOCKOUT for 10% off your first Vivid Seats order. Every purchase is backed by 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app, enter promo code KNOCKOUT for 10% off your first order on Vivid Seats. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event. Support them because they support us. Yes, I am very excited to tell you all that I am going to Toronto for Game 1 of the NBA Finals. I'll be there on Thursday with my man Peter Rosenberg, Kendrick Perkins, Cassidy Hubbard. We're going to be there at Jurassic Park. Yes, a dream come true. First NBA Finals game in Canada, and I will be there as a Canadian. This is incredible. This is absolutely incredible. And by the way, speaking of tickets, thanks to everyone who bought tickets to our first ever Helwani Roadshow, June 7th, Chicago. We are sold out. And I will tell you more about said show for those that bought tickets, what we've got planned. We've got a lot of fun things planned for all of you. Meet and greet, all that stuff and more. Some big names stopping by. But we are sold out. First one in the book, sold out June 7th, the night before UFC 238 in Chicago. I am blown away by the response. And I just wanted to sincerely thank everyone who purchased those tickets. It really means a lot to me and the team. Thank you so much. All right. Let us move along now to our next guest. We spoke to him just a few weeks ago. He is a former UFC fighter. He is the pride of Ireland. He had to retire abruptly because he had a rare blood disorder. And remember when I spoke to him a couple weeks ago, we talked about his foray into politics. We didn't know what would happen. We didn't know what to expect this weekend when the elections went down. Here's a little taste of what happened this weekend.
Exceed the quota. I deem him to be elected. Yeah!
That is courtesy of the godfather of Irish media, Pizzi Carroll Mochara himself, if I pronounce that correctly. That is the man who went from council to counselor, Paddy Houlihan. Congratulations, my man. Well done.
Thank you so much, Ariel. Always good to be getting on your show talking to you, mate.
Yes, it is a pleasure. And certainly after a victory like this, you've had some victories in your day, in the cage, in the rings, on the mats. Is this one a little more special to you?
It was like being a beginner again all over. So, yeah, but this is an incredibly special. It's an achievement that to be elected by the community that you grew up in to be a representative of the community is incredible. Absolute honor.
And again, because I don't want to mess it up for those of us that are, you know, aren't familiar with the scene over there. What seat did you win? What exactly did you get elected to?
So, Ireland is broke up into different councils. Mine is at Talla South. So Talla South has nearly over 100,000 people in it. And in the council, it's built up of different parties. So my party that I represent and have represented for my whole life is Sinn Féin. They've been the power party in this South Dublin County Council for the last probably 10 years. So I have now won a seat to be representing Jobstown. And when it comes to situations, what we need in the vicinities to do it, like building houses, roads, down to as small as, I've had phone calls of people saying, my doorbell's broke. So I'm definitely going to try and stay into my in my field and stick at what I'm doing best in this, which will be youth development and engaging the youth.
When I spoke to you a few weeks ago and when you started all of this, in your heart of hearts, did you really think that you would win? Did you think that you had a chance?
Always. I believe in myself, Ariel. I always have believed in myself, and I've put the work in. As I come into this interview now, I'm at the being over in the football pitches playing with one of the junior teams. They were schooling me in football or soccer, as you was calling. So this is just something that I really enjoy, being able to kind of talk to the youth, especially in this area. And it's like I'm talking to myself as a kid. And if I go back in time and I could tell myself some things that I know now as an adult, that's how I feel when I'm trying to, as I said, light a fire under these kids, because I think the world is made in a way to kind of put kids into a room and just kind of jab them down a little bit. Now, it's very important that kids get out and play and understand what's going on and take pride in their community. This is number one, because it doesn't just teach you how to look after your community. It teaches you things, milestones for when you're an adult.
What was the process like over the weekend as like the results were rolling in? Because from what I understand, it kind of like went 2 days, right? Like it was like more than 15 or so hours. So what were the nerves like? What was the process like? How did you handle it?
So unfortunately, in my constituency, this is a working class area. Unfortunately, the effect that happens from people voting, they don't see it as much. They don't think it's as important to go out and vote. So someone will just say, doesn't matter, so it doesn't affect me. Well, it does. So we're in a situation where 18% only went out, 25% went out to vote. 7 minutes from my house, in a middle-class area, 80% went out to vote.
Wow.
So there's a huge difference between this, and people need to realize that that's the important thing. You have to get out and vote. You're not voting to make change or as such. You're voting to prevent it as well, because you need to keep the people that are making decisions for your area from your area, because then the problems become the person that's elected's problems as well. So everyone's trying to work together and solve it. But say if you have somebody that lives 20 minutes down the road, Ariel, has never lived in this housing estate before, and they put a good campaign together and they get elected, you probably won't see them again, and it'll probably be lots of false promises and unanswered phone calls. So, yeah, so it's extremely important for them to get out and vote, and that's what we have to try and reiterate over the next 5 years, that we need to build this up and make sure that our area is heard and that we represent it.
So you have this position for 5 years?
Yep.
Wow.
5 years.
Okay, and how much has your life changed now? Like, is this your full-time job now, or is this something like do you actually get paid for this? How does that work?
So this is the mistake that people take. They think, oh, you're going to get elected as a councillor and now you're a government man and you're getting thousands and thousands of euro. Fortunately, it's not like that. The wage of a councillor is probably about 13,000 euro a year. So If you were just a councillor and I didn't have the gym and I didn't have another job, I probably couldn't even afford to rent a room over here, Ariel. Working in the council, I wouldn't be able to afford to live or rent near the council. So that's a huge problem in itself, that people think that you're getting hundreds of thousands of euro and now that you're going to have this magic wand that you have to make all these changes. Well, that's not the truth. And do you know what? I wish it was, because I would make the right changes if I did have a magic wand. But unfortunately, I don't have that power. But I do have the power to voice our housing estate. I'm the first male from Jobstown to be represented to be elected to represent Jobstown. So for how long? We've had a long time where you have people going out and making decisions and on their housing estate that they're not from their housing estate. The only people that have looked after this housing estate for the last while, and other housing estates like this, other places like this, would be the Sinn Féin Party. They were there, the People's Party, the Working Class Party, and now, unfortunately, in the County Council, they're no longer the power party. It's looking like Fine Gael are going to be the power party in their County Council, so the same kind of leading groups that have led this country to where it is now are now going to be making the decisions on the housing and on the building and the healthcare and all of this stuff in this area now. So I'm able to be a representative and a voice for area. But as I said, we're outnumbered now in a way when it comes to votes. So even if I did have the best project ever to build houses and end homelessness, I have to now go to Fine Gael Party and try and get this voted in if you must. So you know how politics is, and I just wish everybody got on and everybody was actually thinking about doing the greater good for everybody. But unfortunately, people usually are going out and voting because they're looking for them, they're looking after themselves. So like over here, we have a saying, I'm all right, Jack.
So with that in mind, is it possible that it's actually going to get worse before it gets better?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, Ariel, I'm saying it here right now because I've been reading and chasing this up, and it might get worse before it gets better, and I don't know how worse it can get. I don't know how bad this situation can get. As I said, that the homelessness is, you're talking about people, and I said it on your show the last time, I'm not talking about people with that are alcoholics or people that have drug problems and stuff like this. There is a small percentage of that, but we're talking about people that have two working people that used to own their house, and maybe they couldn't pay their mortgage, and then they tried to rent, and then the rent was like, do you know it cost €1,800 to rent a 3-bedroom house over here for a month?
Wow.
So you're talking, what would that be, maybe $2,500?
Yeah. It's like New York City prices. And,
oh, it's crazy. And there's 6 million of us.
Yeah.
There's probably 6 million in a few blocks in New York. So we're in a situation where it's made to believe that, oh, the place is in bits. The place, it's not, Ariel. We live on an island. We have all the resources to make it. We should be walking around here with bleeding robes on. This is the 6 million people from outside the world to look in. Everyone knows that that's not a lot of people to be looking after. And we're talking about the whole island of Ireland. We have 10,000 people that's registered homeless. There's 100,000 people in hidden homelessness, which means that they have taken their name off the homeless lists in lieu of an apartment somewhere that might get taken away from them because it gets sold by a vulture fund in any day. So people are living in tents beside the Royal Canal. You have 3,000 children sleeping in tents area.
Wow. Who's to blame for this? Like, how did this get so bad?
Our current leader is a guy named Leo Varadkar. You've probably seen Conor was in the parade, and Leo Varadkar was at the same parade, and he wasn't too happy that Conor was there taking his light. But this man has a lot of stuff to deal, a lot of questions to answer, and our housing minister, which would be a guy named Murphy, and he's another guy that he does not care. He doesn't know what it's like to be homeless. He doesn't know what it's like not to have anything in his pocket because he comes from money. He comes from power. He's a career politician, if you must. So we're in a situation where the leaders of this country don't understand and have lost all touch and reality with the actual people on the ground.
Yeah, I saw that clip at the parade. He said that Conor McGregor doesn't represent us, something to that effect, right? And he was unhappy that he was there, and this created some big stir, right?
In the same weekend, his mate spent, I think it was €34,000 going to Japan of taxpayers' money to represent Ireland in the parade.
Huh. Wow.
Same lad that has, they're trying to make hubs, right? Listen to this, Ariel. They're trying to create buildings where 40 people live on the same floor and they share a kitchen, okay? The size of this apartment that they're trying to build has a fold-down bed, falls down out of the wall. There's no kitchen in it. It's the same size as a disabled car parking spot. This is how big the apartments are trying to make. They're trying to make 40 people sharing a kitchen and toilet facilities. So what we call this in Ireland is tenementcy. So these are tenements. Back in the day, this used to be tenements. So this is what they're trying to build again. And not only that, he has told us that we should be very lucky and we should be excited about this. And guess what we have to pay? €1,300 a month for one of these spaces.
Wow.
They are creating this homelessness to profit off it.
Were you always, like even as a kid, interested in politics? Or is this just more like you're an adult now, you're a father, and you see this and you just can't be quiet?
No, it was all, my grandfather taught me very well. I never knew my father, Ariel, but my grandfather lived around the corner from me. And every Saturday morning I used to go around and I used to watch wrestling with him. It used to be Saturday Night Raw, used to be played on Sky One the next morning. And after that, it used to be what used to happen in the Dáil during the week. So the Dáil would be Dáil Éireann, is It's also known as the House of Ireland's Most Notorious Criminals.
Ah.
If you must, but that's a government building over here, the Dáil Éireann. So you would watch what had gone on in this, and he used to explain to me what was happening, and I used to be really interested in it. But over the last 3 or 4 years, I can honestly say that this homeless crisis and the stories that have hit me from people that I know are hard working people, but are just being they're bought out of the market, if you must, and now are ending up in homeless places. You're talking about guys that own plumbing companies, carpentry companies, that can't afford houses, can't afford to save because they're renting. So if you're renting, think about it, you're paying €1,800 a month. How could you save for a mortgage and for a house? You need to be making about €5,000 a month here for that to be happening. So, as I said, this is something that has attached itself to my nervous system. And I swear, man, sometimes I can't sleep at night over this. And I couldn't just sit back anymore. So instead of being one of these guys that's going to, you know, there's no doubt I'm going to take abuse over this. There's no doubt people are, he doesn't know what he's talking about. I call these bar flies. These are people that sit at a bar. So I'm here because this has affected me. And as I said, sometimes I lose sleep over it. And I heard a story that day. I heard a story the other day about a girl making her Holy Communion, and she was getting ready in an emergency accommodation, wow, which is a hotel room, Ariel. And you know what they do? They wake you up in these hotel rooms and they kick you out for the day. So you have to go and walk the streets all day long, and then you come back to the hotel and you might get a room that night. These rooms are costing €140 a night, which is being paid by the taxpayer to the government, because they own shares in a lot of these hotels. The housing minister's family is known for owning hotels. They have that. They've thrown some crazy ideas out here. And the thing is that if they really took on some of the policies that have been put forward by the parties, we wouldn't be in this situation. A market is supply and demand, and they're not building the houses. They privatised the market, and now they've created the demand, which creates the price to go up. It's mathematics.
I saw that you tweeted this right before the election. You said, "No corners cut and kept my self-respect safe to say." Oh, kept my self-respect. Excuse me, safe to say an election is an experience. Thanks to everyone who came out to vote tomorrow, we count. And so the self-respect line really stuck with me. Did you feel at times that people were coming after you? Did you feel like people were questioning you? Because it's a dirty game, right?
Well, it's filthy, Ariel. Yeah. Filthy. Oh, listen. The thing about this game is that they smile at you.
Yeah.
They are your friends, but they're trying to kill you, basically. You know what I mean? Publicly kill you. So we've had some crazy little situations the last little while, and you can see what happens. Here's a mad theory, okay? On the election day, Spice Girls were playing in Dublin. Now, people mightn't think that means anything, but it definitely does, because when it comes to the day of voting, always look back on the track record of there was a big band playing that day or a bit, because people's minds then are in different places. So it's a dirty game in every different way, in the ways of they will put people in that represent the same party to try and butcher each other. So if you go out, if you go get knocked out first, at least your transfers carry your partner over the line and he actually gets elected again. So in my area, I became top of the list in first preference votes. So of everybody else, I topped the poll in the idea of the number one people that wanted me in. Now, that doesn't mean anything. That's what I've realised. Because you get elected after the quota, which means that the first person that gets knocked off the end, everybody, their preference votes get spread out upon everybody else, and this happens all the way up the system, so the count happens and happens and happens and happens. So it's mental.
Wow, that is intense. When does it actually start for you? When does the job start?
So I get an induction now soon. I actually head away with the Irish team to Rome. I'm coaching on the Irish team as well. So we head around to Rome to the European Championships on the 16th. And then there's an induction in the council, and I only found out today I'll get an office.
Oh, well done.
I'll never use it. I'll probably rent it out to some homeless lad, you know what I mean, for a €2 or something like that, just to embarrass everybody else, because it's crazy, man. Like, you want to see what people are renting accommodation for. Some of the accommodation, you wouldn't let an animal live in it. I'm not being bad, but like, and the thing is, say if there's something wrong with your accommodation, and then you start complaining about it, your landlord might just decide, you know what, I could get more money for that accommodation, so people don't even complain about the situations that they're living in because they're afraid to.
That's unbelievable. I mean, it's amazing that they have someone that's as passionate. I joke that, you know, you're very passionate about tea. That's, you know, what I first learned about you. And to see just how passionate you are for your people is an incredible thing that you're actually, you know, a lot of people complain, but you're actually going out there and you ran for this. And you get voted in. It's just an amazing story. And I think it's an amazing story for Irish MMA as well, you know, because for those of us that have followed from afar and followed the work of the likes of P.T. Carroll and have realized the struggles that you guys have had in Ireland to get accepted and how you're viewed as like human cockfighters. Like basically you're viewed as the UFC fighters and MMA fighters were here in this country 20 years ago. For someone of your stature to now get voted in, I think it's a victory for Irish MMA as well. Now they have someone on the front lines and you can't be disparaged like that. So I think it's a great thing for the sport in Ireland as well.
Have a little look around and see who's supporting Ariel and see who's not.
What do you mean by that?
I don't know. Just have a look around and you'll see who's supporting this wave of what we're doing and who's not. Everyone should be getting behind this. Everybody that has any sort of platform should be getting behind this and putting something into this because people comment on everything, but this is important. This is serious. This is, and we have people power is what resonates, and this is what we need now. We need to start getting this together and people to realize that, do you know what? That's bullshit. No matter what much money you have in your bank account, and no matter what position you are in life, don't be an I'm all right, Jack. Think about the other people. I love this country with all of my heart area, and I'll represent it until the day I die. And I'll always do it in the way where I'm trying to get the people that's the most needy in our environment, the most need, and the people that have worked their socks off and are still just being taxed over and over and over again. It's not fair.
Paddy, you're a legend, my man. Around 5 years ago, we met for the first time. Remember UFC Dublin? Can't believe it's been 5 years since that amazing night. And now here you are. Who would have thought 5 years later you'd be doing this? I think you have a much more important job these days, and I'm very happy for you. I'm very, very proud to know you. It's incredible. I don't think I know
I'm
any politicians.
Proud to know you too,
it's an incredible thing that
you've
done. Yes.
I have to say, hats off to you, because you have gave this problem some light. When other people haven't, they've ran away from it and they've covered it and buttered it up, other media outlets and stuff like this. If people really want to be brave and step forward now, they should start seeing what's going on over here and start bringing it outside. Irish people have sought international support for 800 years during the struggles, through all of the stuff that we have, stuff that we've been through. And it's important that the outside world realise that this island is not the island that they left behind. It's not the island of like, deadly I'll die if you think, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's different now when it's been taken over by the rich corporate companies are ruining this place and taking advantage of us, and that's what's happening.
Well, you are now the voice of the voiceless, Paddy, so go out there and do your thing, my man. I wish you the best. Congratulations again, good luck to you, and please keep us posted, and if there's anything we can do over here, please let us know as well.
I definitely will, Ariel. Thank you so much.
All right, there he is. The counselor. Paddy the Hooligan Houlihan. How great is that story? A beautiful story, in fact, and it's amazing. 5 years it's been since that UFC Dublin show, July of 2014. Stands till this day as one of the more memorable events, if not the most memorable event that I have ever covered. And just, I mean, he kicked it off. He kicked off the night. Of course, that's the card that Conor McGregor beat Diego Brandão in the main event. Cathal Pendred on the card, Gunnar Nelson, Norman Park, Paddy Houlihan. It was just a magical night. One of those nights. If you have never seen that card, if you're a newer fan, do yourself a favor. Go on. I think it's on UFC Fight Pass. I think it's on ESPN Plus, maybe. Just go find that card and watch it from start to finish. One of the most magical nights in the history of this sport. So well done, Paddy Houlihan. All right, let us move along. Just a few weeks ago, our next guest fought against Donald Cerrone. There he is in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. It didn't go his way, but here he is, still standing, still the same old Al. Wanted to give him a couple weeks, but now here we are, back and better than ever. Ally Quinta joining us now on the program. Al, how are you?
Better than ever. I'm better than ever. Thanks for having me on. Give me a little time to recover, like you said.
Yes.
But no, it's always good to be back on the show.
Honestly, I blame myself. I screwed up the tradition, and I felt very guilty about that. So never again, okay?
Good. That's awesome. If you're taking the blame, that means that's all your fault.
I will take that blame. I will fall on that sword for you, my man.
Call the record books. Get everything changed. You're taking the loss, not me.
On my record. How are you feeling afterwards, a few weeks later?
I'm feeling great. Took a little while to recover. And that's it. I was swollen. I was beat up. I still got a little cut under here, but I don't think those are going away because of the sun. I go and, you know, get the, it's going to take a while for the scarring to go away because of the sun and whatnot. But, it is what it is. You know, my, no serious injuries. I mean, some pretty serious injuries, but nothing that, won't heal on its own. And I don't need nothing crazy to be done. So just get back in the gym, physical therapy, recover, and back to training as usual.
So when you say some serious injuries, like what?
I broke my nose and I fractured my orbital bone, some deep bruising on my leg from some of those kicks. But, I mean, I guess those are kind of, I think they said there's an average of one orbital bone fracture per UFC event, which is pretty crazy.
Wow.
So I just did another one added to the list. This is going to keep happening. These things don't fit in my ear.
Is it because of the cauliflower ear?
Yeah. Let me try switching them.
Okay.
Maybe if I put the left one in the right and the right one in the left.
Does this usually happen every time you wear headphones?
Yeah, I don't really use these ones. I try to get the...
Oh, right. Top, well, I appreciate you going the extra mile. It sounds better on the show.
Oh, perfect. Absolutely.
Maybe this will work. Let's see. So you did break your orbit. Which side, left or right?
Right side.
Okay. Yeah, you need surgery?
No, I didn't need surgery. Thank God. I was in pain, man. They were like, oh, we might have to do surgery if you can't, you know, if it affects your vision. I was like, please just let me rest. I can't do any more pain. My pain tolerance was at its peak for that one, for sure. But no, everything worked out good and just some rest. It's hard for me to rest. You know, I try to always be doing something. But yeah, I definitely needed to rest a lot after that one. That can't happen again, for sure. It definitely cannot happen again.
And just to be clear, for the nose as well, no surgery, correct?
No.
Okay.
No surgery. It's just a slight little bit crooked. And they're right. Like, we can try to adjust it or fix it or whatever. I was like, just leave me alone, please. Just let me rest.
I saw a video of you at the airport. You were in a wheelchair kind of doing, like, wheelies and stuff. So you were able to fly home the next day, no problem?
Yeah. Wow. They gave me some,
you can keep it like that, by the way, if that works.
It's good?
Yeah, that's fine. That's totally fine.
They give me some pain medication and threw me on the plane and I got home. Thank God. I mean, I think I'm just going to fight in the United States from now. I'm going to try to, at least. It's a little different. Canada was beautiful, but I don't know. Just a little, the healthcare. I never really even thought about it. I fought in Mexico, Australia, freaking England, and never once did I think about, like, oh, I wonder what kind of health care they have or how I'll be taken care of after the fight and stuff like that. And the UFC did a pretty good job of taking care of me, but I think it was, I don't know, it was just a little different. If I ever get injured, I want to be in the good old US of A, you know what I mean?
Really? Because Canada, I mean, I'm sure you know this. I'm Canadian. We have healthcare for all. It's actually known as one of the better healthcare systems.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I don't know. It seemed like I was waiting there for an awfully long time before anyone saw me or anything. Okay. But I mean, I don't know. I know I would have felt a lot more comfortable here. Sure.
All right.
As opposed to there, especially in the conditions that I was in and everything, it was just an extra thing that you think about when you don't really want to be thinking about anything else, you know.
Do you recall how early in the fight you broke the orbital and or the nose?
Uh, he did hit me with a, he hit me with a stiff jab that just, I don't know if it broke my nose, but it cut my nose open. And that was, I mean, I guess the breaking, when it broke, it could have been anyone. He hit me with a bunch of shots, so could have been anyone, but he did cut me open. That might have been the one. But yeah, I think it was somewhere in the third round that he got me in the eye. Maybe the third round or the fourth round he got me, and definitely affected my vision, and it made it really, it was definitely something that was tough to fight through. And but it is what it is. You know, I train to be in those situations. I train to, you know, we do drills where I cover one eye and I'm doing exercises, or I'm spinning around, and then I have to react. So I think that all my training kept me in that fight, and that you know, if I do a little bit more, it'll be, you know, it'll be a little easier. Maybe even come back and get a win, even in the worst situations, like that kind of thing.
Did he surprise you at all in that fight?
I don't know if he surprised me. I don't think I was. I think I knew what I was getting myself into. I think it was a pretty even fight going, you know, leading into that third round, and then at the end of the third round, he hit me with a good punch. He dropped me. I didn't see it at all. I was trying to close the distance, and I did it a little bit haphazardly, kind of moving in too close, too fast. And he's got a good jab. He lands on. I mean, he dropped a bunch of guys with that same punch that he dropped me with. So it's something that I should have been prepared for. But even, you know, you could be prepared for everything. Anything could happen in there. And I wasn't surprised by anything. I knew how good he was, how experienced he was, and definitely knew what I was getting into.
How was that week for you? Like going into the fight, walking to the cage, were you feeling good? Was it one of those fights where you were feeling a little bit off beforehand? How would you describe how you were feeling in the moments before the fight?
I honestly feel like, I don't know, everything, I don't know, how did I feel? They did mess up my walkout music, which is, that freaking pissed me off. I was almost going to like, for a second, I was going to be like, you know what, this, I'm not walking out until you play the right song. But
wait, what were they supposed to play?
The Sopranos theme song. That's what decides. Yeah, that's the one right now.
Yes,
you know.
And what? That's remind me. What did they end up playing?
An old.
Oh, the
New
50
York
Cent, right?
Ja Rule.
Ja Rule. Right. I'm from New York. Yeah. So they, you hear this and you're like, it messes with,
like,
you, right?
I mean, listen. They could have played any song they wanted. I still would have got my ass kicked. So I'm not like, fucking,
but it's annoying.
Say anything. It is. It's just, yeah, it's definitely not. You know, these things happen. Mistakes. I don't know. It would have been nice if they got that right, especially because it was like a main event. I was the last guy walking out. This was a big deal for me. This was, you know, I really was looking forward to this, and, yeah, can't go back and change it now, but I don't know. Yeah, the warm up felt a little. I don't know. I think sometimes maybe that always happens. You're like, oh, I didn't feel great in the warm up, and then you go out there and you knock a guy out, and you're like, you know, it's the way you just. It's weird how I don't know how. You look back and you're like, oh man, everything went great, and then you lose the fight, or everything was going wrong, and then you win. So I don't think nothing really makes a difference. You know, at the end of the day. It's 15, 25 minutes that you just got to put everything to the side. If it's going great, if it's not going great. I mean, I had everybody at that fight. I had so much support leading up to this fight. Everybody came out from Long Island, you know, all my teammates, friends, family. We were all hanging out before the fight. I had so much support. I had every opportunity to win this fight, and I should have, and I didn't. But, yeah, it's the way it goes.
And by the way, just for the record, you did request that Soprano song, right? I get hung up over these things. Okay, I just want to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That's whack. It happened to Rose. You know what?
No, you know, No, well, I got a text and it said, do you want to walk out to the, do you want the same walkout song? And I said, yes, because the last one, I used that song.
Right.
So the same walkout song would have been the same one, you know what I mean? So I guess something got lost there. Maybe they missed my last fight or something. I don't know.
I guess missed that. Main event fight?
Come right?
On. Come on. Jeez Louise.
Come on.
Do we want to put that person on blast or no?
No, no, right, no.
Fair enough.
Trust me, they've been put on blast.
That's right.
Well, we took care of that.
All right, fair enough. Those final seconds at the end of the fight, it was hard to watch. You look obviously like you were in a lot of pain when you went down on your knees. Could you describe that pain, that feeling that you felt? Have you ever felt that before in a fight?
No, not in a fight. It was just a lot of pain. I was hurting, man. I was hurting. And I knew that, like, every second that was going by, it was just like the adrenaline was wearing off. So I tried to leave the cage because my leg was banged up and I was like, I want to get back there, have the doctor check me out. At the end of the, I don't know, in my head I wasn't really thinking about it, and it kind of maybe came off a little disrespectful that I wasn't I don't know, staying for the decision or whatever it was, but my opponent took any offense to it. The way I think about it is like, if I just kick the shit out of somebody's leg and break their orbital bone, if you want to go have a doctor check you out as soon as possible, then by all means, brother, go right ahead. So I was kind of just like trying to get right in the back, have the doctor check me. I knew I was going to have to go to the hospital. I was just hoping that, you know, the injuries weren't that bad. But then they sat me down on the stool, and the doctor looked at me. And then by the time I had to get up and walk out, my leg is swollen. This thing was freaking. He kicked me a few of those low kicks, you know, the low ones by your shin,
yeah,
and then a few of the ones on my thigh, inside and outside. And it was just like my whole leg was swollen. It was like they all connected together and just became one huge swell. But yeah, it was brutal. I'm just finally starting to really be able to move around good again. So it took a toll. That will not happen again. That's for sure.
Are you almost surprised that you made it the 25 rounds, considering the amount of pain that you were in?
Not really. I don't know. It's pretty crazy because the only time I really felt any pain was in between the fourth and the fifth round. When you're in there and you're fighting, you don't really feel anything. I did feel a little like slow and my vision wasn't really there. And I was trying to just like recover a little bit during the fight, but it just really never happened. And he just kept, you know, he just kept, you know, landing shots and stuff and really just picked, he beat the out of me the way a veteran is, you know, gets it done, a way that he's good, man. He's good. I'm looking forward to his fight this week, next week. I'll be out there, actually. Aljamain's fighting on the same card.
Right.
So that's going to be – the guy's freaking crazy, man, but, hey, more power to him. He's hopping right in there. He's going to make a lot of money in about a month. So,
are you surprised he's doing this?
If he feels good,
yeah,
by all means, go right ahead. If I felt good, right, you know, if I was in fight shape and I was feeling good and I got the opportunity, that's a great opportunity. He wins this, he is the number one contender.
Right.
And I'm sure he's getting paid well, and I'm sure, you know, it's what he loves to do. So why not? You know what I mean?
Do you think you'll take the rest of the year off?
No. Hopefully, I'm thinking like September, October, you know, relax a little bit, get some training in the summer. I'm going to go out, probably check out that Performance Institute again, do some work there, and then come back and put in a training camp, you know?
Well, I don't know if this is of interest to you, but I believe you're correct me if I'm wrong, you might be the last guy, unless I'm blanking here. You've not fought at MSG, correct?
I have not, Barclays Center.
Yeah, so I feel like MSG. You're the last one of the New York guys, and MSG, they're going to MSG November. That feels like a good time to come back.
Sign me up. That'd be sick.
Yes. Would Hell you like yeah. that?
No.
You'd want yeah, that, right?
It wouldn't get much better than that, I don't think.
Yeah. Okay.
I like it.
I'm going to call Dana after the show and just, like, plant
a
seed.
Yeah, give him a call. Shoot him a text or something. Be like, yo, you know, we haven't talked in a while, I'm sure, but.
DM,
I think that, DM send him a DM, and I'm sure he'll understand. He'll get me on there right away.
Yeah,
as long as you got my back, but yeah.
Always. I'm happy to see that you're in good spirits. And am I correct in assuming that your parents just celebrated an anniversary? Is that accurate?
40th anniversary.
Wow.
Incredible.
40th anniversary. That's what'd you guys do?
Oh, we went down to the cabana. You've been there before. We had a bunch of their friends down there. We had a dinner and just hung out, some old stories, and you know, good times. It's always good times with them, and it's great that what an accomplishment. It speaks about the both of them so much.
Did your mom make pina coladas for everyone?
No, we were just crushing the wine. We were just drinking wine. No pina. I don't know.
Let me tell you something. Your mom makes an incredible pina colada. I'll just leave it at that. I'm still thinking about it. 3 years later.
There we go. Well,
all right.
You're welcome back anytime, Ariel. Anytime.
Thank you.
Have a little party. I'm sure she'll love to make some pina coladas.
Virgin, only virgin.
Yeah, you don't have to know.
Okay.
You just take what you're given.
Thank you, Al. It's great to see that you're okay, in good spirits. I'm sure this is not a good consolation, but you showed incredible heart as always, and always an honor to watch you fight. So I hope that you're not holding your head too low. You have a lot to be proud of, and I forgive you for everything that you said about my country. No hard feelings.
No, oh, it's a great hey, Ottawa. What a great we had a great time there.
Yeah,
we saw a lot. The War Museum. There was a lot to see, and I wish I could have stayed longer. The weather was beautiful there. It was, it was awesome. I had a great time in Canada, you know, aside from getting beat up and everything. But, it's good. Ring of Combat 68, I'm going to be commentating this Friday night on Fight Pass.
Wow.
So make sure everyone tunes in. I'm going to be behind the mic.
Wow.
We have some great fights, a bunch of Cerro Longo guys. So definitely
Fight
Pass. Get Ring of Combat. I came up fighting in the Ring of Combat. Chris Weidman.
Yes.
Frankie Edgar. I could go John Volante. I could go on for on and on and on about the great fighters that have come from the Ring of Combat. So I'm sure there's going to be a few more guys coming from this weekend show and eventually making it onto the UFC and maybe even being champions. You never know.
That's amazing. All right. Congratulations. I'll check that out this Friday, Ring of Combat. The broadcasting debut of Ally Quinto. Well done, my man.
Yes.
We'll check it out, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks, as always, for the time.
Appreciate it, Ariel. Thank you.
All right, there he is, the one and only Raging Ally Quinto. How about that? Great news. Feeling okay and making his color commentary debut this Friday as well. All right, let's move along. Let's go back to this Saturday's main event. We spoke to Anthony Smith earlier. Now let's talk to the other half of the main event. Let's talk to the one and only Alexander Gustafsson, who's kind enough to join us via the phone. Alex, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Are you good?
I'm doing great, yes. And I appreciate you joining us on Fight Week. I know it's very hectic. Are the Swedish, you know, fight weeks for you a little more hectic? Do you like it when you're the focus of all the attention?
No, I love to be home. I love to be here and, be home and just, being in Fight Week. I feel relaxed and calm. And, you know, I do the same media as always, so. Nothing more, nothing less. Just enjoy my time.
From what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, you have like almost like a farm or a compound very far away from Stockholm, right? Like 90 minutes away. Is that where you spend a lot of your time?
Yeah, I got a farm. I live in Stockholm, but I got a farm approximately about 1 hour and 20 minutes from the city center, so it's not that far.
Okay. But it's very removed, like it's very, like there's nothing around you, correct?
Yeah, you got a neighbor too, but it's countryside. It's, it's way out that, you know, on the countryside, you know, the only thing you have around you is trees, you know, sorry, I mean, trees and fields and, oh, you know, I mean, like lakes and stuff like that. Just calm and relaxation, basically.
Is that where you spend your camp to be away from everyone?
No, I do my camps in Stockholm. I live in Stockholm, so I do my camp. I get the gym here, but I go out there as soon as I can when I have some free time and rest body and soul.
Okay, you know, I was looking at your resume, and since 2015, you have fought once a year, and so this kind of feels like a quick turnaround for you because you've just fought 6 months ago.
No, I stopped doing that. I stopped doing that. It's no more fights, one fight a year. I'm gonna, you know, put up the pace now, and I'm gonna take this fight. I start with the atmosphere in the Globe and in Stockholm. And take it from here. I'm just going to stack them up and take one fight at a time and try to compete as much as I can.
Well, why did you switch the way, you know, the way you're going to go after these fights? Why change the approach now?
No, you know, it's not my thing, you know, just going two fights a year, one fight a year. It's too late. It doesn't work. I can't keep doing that shit. So I'm just going to. And it's been because of, you know, different factors. Some of them has been injuries. Some of them has been like because it's title fights. And I've been up there and, you know, I've been putting everything I have in every fight. I mean, like every title fight, and it's just been like once a year. So it's not really my thing anymore. I feel like, you know, I feel like it's, you know, let's go back to where when I started, you know, started my career. You know, I didn't care who I fought, when I fought, where I fought. I just took one fight at a time, and my only goal was to win that fight, nothing else, you know. And that's where I'm at today. I just want to fight more and have fun doing it.
My understanding is you actually wanted to fight sooner, but you kind of stuck around because this card is in Sweden. Is that accurate?
No. I'm lucky to fight here in Sweden at the Globe, but at that time, I just thought I wanted to have a fight. You know, after the John fight, I felt like I need a new fight right away. I just need to get in there again. But I turned out fighting here, and I just love to have that opportunity to fight at home. So, you know, I'm really happy about this opportunity and fighting Anthony Smith.
Can I ask you, where are you right now, Alex?
At hotel, fighter hotel.
Is it? I hate to be rude, but is it possible to ask the people next to you to be a little quiet because it's hard to hear you?
I can move. One second.
Okay. Because there was a lot of commotion.
Yeah, sorry about that. I'm here now. Yeah. You hear me?
Yeah, that's much better. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Okay. No problem.
And I apologize for asking you to move.
Don't worry about it.
Were you surprised when he took this fight so soon after the loss to John Jones?
Well, no, not really. I think he wanted to fight me for a long time, and this is his opportunity. So, yeah, I think he wanted to fight.
Did you hear his comments, you know, just a couple of days after when he was on my show? He did an interview where he talked about how he wasn't really into this fight, but he's going to do it because they asked him to do it, and it seemed like he was really conflicted. And I just spoke to him. Did you hear any of this?
Yeah, it's true, yeah.
What did you make of that?
No, nothing. You know, Anthony Smith is, first of all, he's, you know, he's a great guy, but he's also a true fighter.
Right.
You know, I, wherever he is, wherever, you know, he fights, he comes really to fight, and he got some serious power in his hands. He rushes people, and he just, you know, he's just doing his thing. Well, you know, he will be ready. He will be more than ready for this fight. This is his opportunity, as mine, you know. I have to be ready for it.
Yeah.
It's my hometown. I have to make a statement. I lost to John, and here I am now fighting again. I have to make a statement to show people that, first of all, it's a great opponent, and also it's in my hometown, and I come from a loss, so you know, I'm up for the challenge and I'm ready for it. I can't wait to face him.
Yeah, and he told us earlier, just to be clear, that he's not feeling that way anymore. It was just sort of fresh after the loss. And I'm wondering, you know, you fought John before. You watched, I'm sure, his fight against John. Were you impressed that he went the distance with John? Like, did you – obviously, that was a very one-sided fight for John Jones, but was there anything out there that he did against John Jones that impressed you?
No, not really. Okay. I don't think – I haven't based any strategy for watching that fight at all. No game plan at all. I don't think Anthony really was himself in that fight, because in other fights he's just been crushing legends. He's been going through people like a train, and this fight just stand against. He just took a beating for five rounds. So I don't know. I don't take anything from that fight at all. You know, he's a tough guy. You know, he's a guy. It's hard to finish him. You know, and even if it's a really bad situation for him in the fight, he just keeps staying composed. He doesn't stress. He's dangerous. So yeah, you know, I'm ready for the best Anthony.
Were you surprised that he didn't take the illegal knee? Like, if you were in that position, would you have done the same thing, or would you have? Because he could have won the belt.
No. That's not the way you win a belt. I would just keep going, like he did. He's a fighter. He's a warrior, like that. So
that's the honorable thing to do.
Yeah, 100%.
I would have taken the belt, by the way. That's okay, life-changing money right there.
No,
you get the rematch, right?
No comment. Yeah, but, you know, you need to have some warrior spirit, too, and some, you know.
Well,
no comments.
That's the difference between you guys and me, I guess. You guys do something that I can...
Maybe.
Yes.
I think it's a true samurai in you, too.
All right, fair enough. Thank you for that. And when you were offered this fight against Anthony, did you like the opponent for Sweden, or was there someone else that you had in mind?
Yeah. No. I like the opponent.
Because there was a weird thing between you and Corey Anderson, like the day the fight was announced, you guys were, what happened there?
No, I don't know. I have no idea. I have no idea. I'm going to fight Corey Anderson one day. Anyway, so it doesn't matter. I'm happy to fight Anthony Smith here, and you know, he's a very entertaining fight. Comes to fight, and it's gonna be a war. I'm truly happy that I'm facing him.
You have fought as a member of the UFC. You have fought in your home country three times. You have two victories and one defeat. I was at the one fight against Rumble Johnson. I'll never forget that fight because it was at like 4 a.m. to accommodate the American.
Yeah, it was crazy.
It was crazy. And I just remember the crowd just was completely silent after what happened. Do you remember that feeling?
No,
everything. It was such a big fight for you, and it was in that big stadium, right? Do you think about that? Like the feeling of losing at home is probably something that you never want to experience again. Do you use that as motivation, that experience?
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. 100%. Yeah, that was the fight. I shouldn't have lost at all, you know, but I did it, and it was a terrible feeling.
Yeah.
But, so absolutely, it's something that I have in my mind, and in a good way. It motivates me a lot, and the only thing I'm thinking about is not being that situation in that position again, ever. As long as I'm doing this and competing and being active, I'm going to make sure I'm going to stay undefeated in my hometown, in my home country. So that's, I mean, from that loss, I know now and you know, in the future, I'm just going to be, every fight I do in Sweden, in Stockholm, I'm going to do my best, and I'm going to make sure I get the W every time. So.
Someone asked me recently, you know, what is at stake in this fight? And I don't know if a title shot is necessarily at stake because both of you just fought John. And I asked Anthony that question. And for him, he's just like, I just want to get the feeling that the embarrassment from my performance against John, because I'm so unhappy with it. I need to get it out of my system. And so I want to ask you the same question for you. What is at stake in this fight? What are you fighting for in this one?
To make a statement, you know, I just feel like, I want to show people that I belong at the top to fighting the best guys, and also it's in my hometown, so you know I just want to, you know, go in there and perform like never before, like I have never done before, just do my thing and get that W and get that feeling of winning again. And just pile them up, one at a time, and let's see what the future brings.
So do you sort of sympathize with what he's saying about like the bad feelings that you want to get out of your system after the fight against John?
Yeah, we all yeah, of course, we're all competitors here. We do it for one reason. That's reason is just, you know, we're all fighting for one reason, and that is because we want to stand in that octagon with a W and having that feeling in you. You know, and that's why we do this, and you just want to get that loss. You just want to forget that loss and keep moving and keep winning and have that flow and that feeling in your body. It's the best thing you can do as a competitor and as a fighter.
Have you watched that fight a lot in the build up to this fight?
No, of course I've seen it. But, okay. But it is what it is, you know. It's John. He's not human. he's a beast in every way. So it, you know, it is what it is. I'm fine by it now. I'm not fine with it because it's a loss, and a loss is a terrible thing to have on your record and to have it with you as a fighter. But it's sport. We're doing sports here. We have to move on. Life goes on. You know, like we have more fights to do. We have more fighters to fight. So I'm here, man. I'm here to take just one fight at a time, and get that W, and just keep going, and see where I'm at, end up in the future. You know.
And how is your groin feeling?
Sorry?
Your groin, because you injured your groin in that fight, right?
Yeah. No, yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's good. It's much better. Yeah. No, I hurt really bad. Yeah. I've been hurt in fights. But this was something extra. I never felt this way before. It was just a well-placed knee from nowhere, and he shut me down totally. No footwork whatsoever, no kicks, no nothing, no knees. The only thing I could do was pressure. I couldn't even defend the takedown. I couldn't even get up when it's on top of me, and nobody can hold me down. I'm telling you. I'm doesn't matter if it's John or DC or whoever's on top of me. I'm getting up. That's my thing. Nobody holds me down like that. And I couldn't. I was stuck on the ground there. I had so much pain. But that's history now.
Well, and did you need surgery on it? No, right?
No. But I had a kind of bad bleeding.
Wow.
In the groin, and we have some bones in there that I hurt a little bit. So I got some, I don't know how to say it in English. Never mind. But it was hurt bad, but I didn't operate it or anything. I just had to treat it.
Okay. And my last thing for you, Alex, is it possible that your career is on the line? Like I heard that you said recently, like that if Anthony Smith beats me, maybe I don't have it anymore. Is that the mindset that you have going into this fight?
I always had that mindset. You know, I always go in there to win. You know, I don't do this to lose. I don't do this to be the number two guy. I do this to win and to be the best. You know, so it's every fight for us. And for me, for all of our fighters, and for me, it's just like every fight is, you know, it's your career. It's on the line. Your career is on your line. You know, nobody wants to see, you know, you don't want that loss on your record. That's how it is. So, and that's my mindset. I don't lose. I just go in there to win. Nothing else.
I can't wait for this fight. Alex, thanks so much for doing it. I really appreciate it. Thanks for coming on the show. Good luck to you this week. Good luck in the fight on Saturday. I wish you the best.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
All right. There he is. Alexander the Mauler Gustafsson. I think both guys who aren't the most, you know, braggadocious fellows in this game, I think both did a phenomenal job of selling us on this fight. Not that they needed to sell us on this fight, but now I feel what a difference a week off makes, my friends. I am amped. I am ready to go. I am excited. I'm also excited to end the show with our next guest. He is the reigning, defending UFC featherweight champion. He is the one and only Max Blessed-Allway. He has just touched down in God's country. Say it with me, Max. Are you there? Say it with me. We go into the ship. We go into the ship. What? We go into the ship. Yeah. Max Holloway, my man. How you feeling, Max?
I feel great, man. I feel great. I can't wait. Just got off a plane. A little bit tired. I know people are going to watch this film and be like, look, he's going back to 45 and he looks tired or whatever, but it's just the flight, man. The travel is crazy. We red-eyed out. We just got here a couple hours ago and ready to attack this damn media day.
Yeah, I appreciate you doing this. Thanks to you and your team, your man Chris, because I know you just got off the plane. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it, Max. But you're back in Canada. Things are good. The Raptors made the finals. I got to ask, you're so close to Toronto. Are you going to go to game one or two?
You know, the whole thing going on, I've been talking with, texting the GM, Bobby Webster. And he's been hackling me to come out. And, you know, I'm in camp. We'll be in camp pretty soon when we get back. So I don't think I'll be able to make it. But I'll be watching every single game. You know this. You guys know this. I've been going crazy. There's the reaction video. I was going crazy.
Yes. I feel like we need you there, Max. On behalf of Canada, we need you there. I'm going to game one, Max. I was hoping to see you there.
I know. I wanted to go so bad. Did you see how much someone paid for seats?
Crazy. Yes.
Someone paid the $57,000 to sit courtside. That's ridiculous. And, man, that's so crazy. It's crazy. It's, I don't know what to say. I'm still on a high. The video, they're so crazy that they did what they did, you know? They did the backside sweep, I'm calling it. They went 0-2, and then they went 4 straight. And I got another game. I think so they win in 6 games. I think so. Raps to do it again in 6 games. So
that's the official Max Holloway prediction. Raps in 6.
That's the prediction. Raps in 6, baby. Let's go.
Wow.
Bring one home, Raps. Let's go, baby.
I love it, Max. I love it. I love it, baby. All right. That's very exciting. I can't wait. It's going to be a lot of fun. So, obviously we haven't talked. We haven't heard much from you since April, since the fight against Dustin Poirier. Were you surprised at all by Dustin? I think we all thought this was the beginning of your run at 155, and then we saw you in there, and he looked so much bigger than you, and obviously fought a great fight. Like, were you surprised by the experience, by what he brought to the table?
Not at all. You know, not at all. He's one of the best guys in the world. Like you say, he beat former champs, and even about the fight, you know, we could talk about when we fought 145 because that was so long ago. If I talk about the fight now, you know, I don't. You know, that's not right for Dustin. You know, if I talk about the fight right now, it's going to sound like I'm making excuses. And I'm not going to make no excuses. No, he was the better man that night. And he took the W. You know, congratulations to him. I'm excited to see him and Khabib go after it. And I can't wait. You know, we're back. We're ready. I'm going to be back here in the 10th Island. And I can't wait to fight again.
So you're taking this fight, you know, relatively soon after the fight against Dustin. You know, you're coming back just, 3 months later. Was that always part of the plan, or did they come to you and say, we need you for this card?
No, that was part of the plan. You know, the plan was fight at 55, come back in summer, defend my 45 belt, and we go from there. You know, I got back from, after the fight, we got back from to my hotel room at 5 a.m. in the morning. Dana called us at 12 o'clock in the afternoon to check us, and I was harassing him already. I was like, when is my next fight? You know, book my next fight. I wanted to get back in there. And exciting times. You know, they came with this. This is the fight they came up with. And I was excited for it. I can't wait. You know, me and this dude got some history, and I can't wait to share the octagon with him.
So there was this video that came out afterwards of your son, Rush, who was sitting cage side. He was very emotional watching that fight. And I think, you know, since he's been coming to your fights, that was the first time that he saw you lose, right?
Yeah.
What was to see his reaction, to see how much pain he was in for you?
You know, Ariel, me and you are the same. You know, I'm a dad. You know this. And, you know, life sometimes is about how to take L's, you know. The kid didn't reach it. He never saw me lost, you know. He never saw me lost. I was a superhero in his eyes, you know. And he noticed that, hey, his dad is normal, you know. And he grew. He came stronger. And now I think I'm positive. And he's taking the step to be my superhero one day. So it is what it is, you know. It was a life lesson, and it was a hard one, you know. I talked to him after the fight, you know. I told him, I asked him, I was like, "What? Why you cry for it?" He wasn't crying when I was getting punched in the face or cut or whatever. He said he actually cried because I lost. So, you know, that's cool. You know, a lot of people, they don't understand. There's difference in this, you know. A lot of people always tell me, "Oh, why you take the kid to the fight and blah blah and so on." This is all he knows. You know, all he did know was me winning, and all he sees me is fighting. When he was a young kid, he came training with me. I didn't have a babysitter at the time. He had to come to the gym with me, and that's what we did, you know. And now he understands that I lost that little superhero ability, but he's one step closer to becoming my superhero. So, you know, you win some, you lose some.
Was it hard for you to see him like that? Did it break your heart?
I saw him crying, you know. I talked to him, and it's life, you know. I had to be strong for him. I had to hold back some tears, but not today. This is life, you know. Things come to end. All good things come to end sometimes, and it's just learning experiences, man. You know, when I saw him, you know, I just talked to him, you know. I was glad. I told him, hey, not to ever cry again. Don't do that. You break your daddy's heart. And he promised me he wouldn't, so it's cool.
It's pretty amazing. He's got Shaq trolling him. Did you see that? Everyone loves him so much.
Yeah, I saw Shaq. Yeah, I saw Shaq. I saw Dustin. I talked to him. And they're cool. You know, this sport, man, this sport is amazing. This is just a different sport. This is the people in it, the fighters, people think we're one way. And then when you get to see behind the scenes, you know, through it in the agony, I think that's one of the best videos that UFC drop, you know, is when they do the through it in the agony. They see the raw emotion, the real people, and you know, I didn't even know the camera was there half the time. I was tripping out when they got someone's film of it. I was like, oh wow, I didn't see him, so that's cool.
Yeah, it's amazing footage that you guys allow us to see that part of you. And I don't even know if you can answer this question, Max, but I will ask it anyway. Like, you always seem to say and do the right thing. You know, sometimes the sport gets really ugly at times, and like the way you and Dustin handled, you know, yourselves, conducted yourselves, what you said to him afterwards, even how you react to the loss afterward, what you say on social media, where does that come from? Have you always been that way? Like, why, you know, I hope I'm not jinxing you here, but you always just have the ability to say and do the right thing. You are an amazing representative for our sport, and I'm not just saying it because I'm talking to you. I said it on the Monday after the fight. You and Dustin represent the best of MMA, the way you conduct yourselves. Has that always been something that's been inside of you, or is that just part of your maturation as a person and a fighter?
I gotta thank my grandparents. You know, my grandparents, my parents. They're the one that raised me. You know, they're the one that you see. And then I got a great team behind me. That makes sure. You know, there's a lot of stuff that goes on in this sport that my team would just have nothing to do with me if I did. So, you know, this is one part of life. You know, this is one part of life to me. You know, fighting is a lot to me. But at the end of the day, being a greater person, you know, I always told people that at the end of the day, you know, the belts and everything and the records and whatever and so on, it's all cool and all. But my thing is, if it's changing the world, you know, if one day someone came up to me and told me, wrote me a letter or came to my house or saw me in private and said, hey, look, you changed my life. You know, that's what it's about. You know, it's changing one person's life. You want to leave this world better than when you was here. So that's the plan.
Are your days of fighting at 155 over?
After that Dustin fight, you know, after the first Dustin fight at the 45, you know, the ladder to get in a title shot was so long, was so far, because it was brand new, you know. But, you know, no disrespect to 55ers or all the challenges there. But, you know, after this loss to Dustin, the ladder at 55 ain't really that long, you know. I feel like if I want to go up there and mix it in with them, then we get in it. You know, me and my team, we sat down after the Dustin fight, like we said, we talked about it, and we see what happens. You know, my agenda was always going to 55. I'm grateful for all the 45 and the 55 challenges that let me do that. But it was always to come back down, defend my belt, and then go from there, you know. So we see what happens. You know, 55 ain't out, you know. Fishes swim. Birds fly, and I fight, so I can't wait.
So you and Frankie have been booked to fight each other twice in the past. The fight has fallen through for various reasons, and as this was coming together, myself, other media members, other people were very vocal about the fact that we thought that Alexander Volkanovski should have gone the next title shot because he's won 17 in a row, undefeated in the UFC, beat Jose Aldo, etc. But they went with Frankie. What did you make of the decision to go with Frankie? Are you okay with that?
Yeah, you know, after this fight, you know, when I was asking for the fight after the Dustin fight, I literally asked Dana when he talked to me that day at 12 o'clock that afternoon, on Sunday afternoon, I asked Dana, I told him, when I'm going to fight. We talked to the UFC, we asked who we're going to fight. And, you know, they said they was waiting. They're going to wait to see after that Alex Jose fight. And I was like, cool, you know, just send over a contract when you guys ready. And, you know, I don't know what they was looking for. You know, maybe they was looking for something exciting, you know, some type of top performance. And I guess so in their eyes, they didn't get it. You know, there's, you know, even when you look at me, you know, like, I'm not saying anything, but UFC, they like baking some guys. You know, it took me 10 fights to get an interim title shot and my man DC to get hurt. So, so you know, that's the, you know, it's just time, you know. If they really want to screw Alex over, I think they would have left him ranked number 4 or 5 or whatever rank he was and not move him to number 1, you know. I think so he's going to get the fight, you know. That's just it, you know. There's guys like Connor and Izzy, you know. These guys that made highlight reels, that's how come they got their title shot so fast, you know. And then there's guys like him or me that sometimes they just feel like, oh, let's bake these guys a little bit longer and let's see what they're made of. So I don't think so he lost his shot at all. You know, I know he was just hospitalized in his foot. I hope everything is going great for him. You know, I saw him talking to the show, so we see. We go from here, you know. First thing first is Frankie, you know. And like I said, I don't get to choose. You know, these guys, they think I get to call up UFC and like, I want to fight this guy. It doesn't work that way. You know, when you're a champ, they usually call you up and say, look, you're fighting this guy and that's it. Sign the contract. And I ain't got no problem with that.
I know you don't like to choose. You don't want to choose. But it did feel to me like there was a part of you that felt like, at some point, I need to beat Frankie. At some point, that would be a good thing for my career to get by him because he's a former champion and all that, and he's such a legend in this game. Is that accurate?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Frankie is one of the guys that you want to fight. You know, Frankie, Aldo, these are the guys that I wanted to fight, you know. And, you know, I just came to fruition, you know. Third time's a charm, I hope. And I can't wait. And why not do it here in Canada? You know, I heard I was talking to a guy that's talking to me about the arena, our driver, and he said how much the arena costs, how much they spend on the Jumbotron, that's going to be crazy. You know, when he was telling me the prices of this stuff, I was tripping out. So I'm excited to be here.
Let me tell you something, Max. I've been to a lot of arenas in my day. The arena in – do I still have you? We may have lost Max there. I was about to tell him something about Rogers Arena. Oh, he's back. Max,
are
you back?
Sorry about that.
No problem. Yeah. The arena in Edmonton, Rogers Arena, is the nicest arena that I've ever been to in the entire world. It's unbelievable. So you're in for a treat.
I can't wait. I mean, I'm so excited. That's what I heard. I heard it's like it old records and stuff. So I'm excited to fight here. Can't wait.
And have you seen Frankie yet, or are you going to do media with him this week?
I think we do media together this week. I haven't seen him. I haven't seen him yet. But okay. I think we got a couple stuff on top of the schedule together.
Did you watch that Volkanovski Aldo fight? And if so, were you impressed with Volkanovski?
No, I didn't get to see it. I didn't get to watch it. I forget what I was doing, but I didn't get to see it. But I heard he won. You know,
yeah.
To beat the King of Rio in Rio is a tough thing. So you know, congrats to him and. You know, exciting times right now. Exciting times. A lot of contenders is popping up, and I can't wait.
There's this idea that's been thrown out, and I hope you don't say to me that you're just going to focus on July 27th because I'm going to ask the question anyway. But there's this idea thrown out that
I already know what the question is.
Israel, Robert, Australia, Alex, you, co-main event, Australia. Would you do that? Would you go to Australia to fight an Australian?
No, I'm not. Never say never. Like Justin Bieber's famous song. Hey, don't say it. You know, at the end of the day, we see what happens. I like opportunities. Why not? You know, I went to King of Rio. You know, I fought him there. That's what kings do, I guess. They go to other people's villages and they take over, right? So we see what happens. You know, we take one step at a time. We got a hands full with Frankie right here coming up. So I can't wait. You know, we see what happens. We see what UFC has to offer after this and we go from there.
But in your schedule, you said, you know, the plan was always fight April, then come back in the summer, defend your title. Would then coming back in around October, if all goes well in July, would that fit your schedule, or would that even be too soon for you?
We see what happens, you know. We talked about summer with my team, okay. And we didn't really go after that. We just wanted to do the 45 thing. We wanted to fight the 55, come back to 45, and we was going to figure out after that. You know, we'll see what happens. We got a lot of our plate right now, and I just can't wait. Like, this is exciting times right now. There's a bunch of fights, big fights coming up, and I can't wait.
I would imagine, though, it would be a little bit annoying. Like, you've been trying to get the UFC to come to Hawaii all this time, and then you got to go to Australia to fight an Australian. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I know. UFC Hawaii is a thing. I still believe it's going to happen. I still believe that. They can't be denying me for much longer. Come on, man. We need one home. So we see what happens. You know, I'm a faithful. I still got faith in it 100%. But if it's Australia, it's Australia. If it's the ninth island, Las Vegas, it's Las Vegas. So we see what happens.
It has been a long time that you have gone into a fight coming off a loss, Max. It's been a considerable amount of time. To be exact, when was it? 2013, an incredible run, that fight against Conor McGregor. So we're talking 6 years since, you know, you've gone into a fight off a loss. Do you feel different? Like, is your mindset different? Your confidence different? Is it a different experience now for you?
Not at all. You know, not at all. I approach every single fight like I told you guys before. You know, I'm 0-0. I'm 0-0 every fight. You know, the win streak was cool. The records I'm breaking is cool, but I'm 0-0 every fight. You know, I try to just stay focused at the task at hand and not look too forward, not look too back. But, you know, it is what it is. You know, loss is not going to define me, you know, and I said it before. A true champion is measured by what he can do after a loss and not what he can do if he keep on winning, you know. So you guys get to find out. June 27th is going to be an exciting time. You know, I get to be back in my adopted country.
Yes.
And I can't wait to do it.
How much did you weigh in that fight against Dustin? Do you know?
I do not know.
Okay.
I do not know.
I'm just wondering, are you dreading this cut back down? Like, was life so good in Atlanta that week that you forgot what life is like cutting to 145?
No, life is all right in Atlanta, you know. But, you know, at 45, I'm not dreading it at all.
Okay.
You know, I'm a king. I'm a champ. We've been here, done that too many times, you know, so I can't wait.
How long are you staying in Edmonton for?
I'm staying here only for one night, my friend. I get home to Hawaii Wednesday night. So they got us jam-packed there.
Damn.
After we got here, I got to go do some media stuff, go to sleep, wake up, do some media stuff. I got my plane in the afternoon tomorrow, and I arrive Wednesday night at home. So that's the great thing about flying to Hawaii. You always give back some time, so I'm excited.
Yes, and I know you come from, by the way, you come from a country, or I should say a state that has beautiful beaches. I don't know if you know this, but in Edmonton, they have one of the biggest malls in the world. They have an indoor beach. So if you're...
Beach.
If you're,
you know, hey, if you guys ain't following me on YouTube, all Maxis, do you guys a favor and go ahead over to YouTube and follow me, because you know we're going to that beach. That's going to be all Maxis stuff. We're going to do it. You got to tell us the other secrets about, you know. I heard there's a famous lake. We looked it up over here. 6-hour drive. I don't know if we're going to do it when we come up, but, you know, there's a lot of stuff we do, you know. Make sure you head over to YouTube. Follow me, all Maxis. We're going to do that beach. We heard about it, and I can't wait. I'm excited for it.
Perfect. Yes, I want to see the Hawaiians at the indoor beach at the mall in Edmonton. That would just be absolutely perfect.
You can see a bunch of Hawaiian acting some fools at an indoor beach.
I love it. You're doing a great job, as always, with the social media stuff. And it was great to see your reaction to the Raptors win on Saturday. Max, thank you so much for doing this, my man. I really appreciate it, especially coming off the plane. It means a lot to us. So enjoy your time in Edmonton. It's a beautiful city.
Thank you, brother.
They call it the City of Champions, by the way. So you'll fit right in.
Ooh,
right over there.
It's
you
a
and Wayne Gretzky.
Fit.
Exactly. You and Wayne Gretzky, my man.
Oh,
enjoy it out there,
yes,
and
man,
we'll talk to
you
soon. Go Raptors, baby.
No, thank you, fam. Go Raptors. Let's go. Raptors in six. Let's go, baby.
Yes, I love it. There he is. Max Holloway, the adopted son himself, returns to Canada July 27th, Edmonton. To be exact, the Rogers Arena, like I said, maybe the most beautiful arena that I've ever been to, will host the card. And And let me just say this about this main event, because I know the words have been twisted and this nonsense. Because I reached out to Frankie, and just to let him know, like, I have the utmost respect for Frankie Edgar. Frankie Edgar is a legend, and he is a Hall of Famer. If there's ever an MMA Hall of Fame, you know, he should be first ballot, a true independent Hall of Fame. No one is questioning his resume. No one is questioning what he's done. All the talk about, like, I'm just looking at it as a factual thing. You're asking me a question: who deserves this title shot between Volkanovski and him? You have to have an answer. But that is not to take anything away from Frankie Edgar, and I have no problem with this fight. And especially, I mean, it's weird how things turn out. I don't think they made the decision after what happened to Volkanovski's foot. I think they made it before, but it kind of ends up being a blessing in disguise from a timeline standpoint. I'm looking forward to this fight. It's a fun fight. It almost feels like a rite of passage, if you will, for Max, something that he wanted to do, needed to do, to really cement his spot as one of the all-time greats, not just at 145, but in the history of this sport. So no problems here, at peace with it, and certainly looking forward to it on July 27th. A couple of pieces of breaking news before we say goodbye on this Tuesday edition of the show. And I have to say, a very uplifting version of the program. A lot of great stories, a lot of great personalities. I enjoyed it very much. This from what in the world? So, Yoel Romero, wait a second. Yoel Romero, as I reported a few weeks ago, was suing Gold Star Performance Products for that failed drug test that he had several years ago. It ended up coming out as a contaminated supplement. I was told by his manager, Abraham Kawa, that in New Jersey earlier today, they won their case against Gold Star Performance Products. And this is what he wrote to me. $27.45 million is the total Yoel was awarded. $3 million for lost wages, $3 million for reputable harm, $3 million for emotional damage. Multiply that times three for the State of New Jersey Consumer Fraud Act. That's insane. So $27.45 million was just awarded to Yoel Romero. And that courtesy of Abraham Kawa and his lawyer, Howard Jacobs, who's one of the best when it comes to these kinds of cases. I just asked him a follow-up question. If Yoel actually gets all that money, he just wrote, yes, minus legal fees. What? That's an absurd amount of money. I just wrote that to him. Well, there you have it. Breaking news right over there. Yoel Romero. So everyone who smeared his name and dragged his name through mud after that, calling him a cheater, it looks as though the State of New Jersey is siding with Mr. Romero. Also, somewhat breaking news, I saw that Scott Coker posted on Twitter moments ago that they have signed Robin Van Roosmalen, who is a former Glory kickboxing champion. And it appears as though they are putting him in their 145-pound Grand Prix. He only has two pro MMA fights if you're a Glory kickboxing fan. If New York Rick was here, he'd wax poetic all day long about how great of a fighter he is. But no, honestly, I know, I think most combat sports fans, certainly MMA fans, have heard of Robin Van Roosmalen. It appears as though Bellator has signed Robin Van Roosmalen, and they are throwing him into that Grand Prix, which kicks off in the fall. So that is a very interesting signing on their part. Justin Willis has been released from the UFC. They could not come to an agreement. Oh, here's New York Rick writing me about Robin Van Roosmalen. He's going to tell us about his third...
No New York Rick on my show.
Yeah, oh, Corporate Jake laying down the hammer. I like it. Only two division champ in Glory history. What can you tell me about Robin Van Roosmalen, Corporate Jake?
Another time.
Okay. Great out on that one. Justin Willis, gone from the UFC, couldn't come to terms on when his next... He just signed a new contract, and they said, no, we're not waiting for you. So they gave him his walking papers Elias Theodoru also gone, 8-3 in the UFC. So an interesting time as far as the UFC maybe shedding some names from its roster. Very interesting. Both I don't find to be the most controversial releases of all time. I'll give you more thoughts on those on tomorrow's episode of Ariel and the Bad Guy. How about that little plug? All right. One last thing on the Yoel Romero situation, because I'm all shook up. State of New Jersey has a clause: when they find the company to have committed consumer fraud, they multiply the damages by 3. Holy smokes. Everyone move to New Jersey. Take all your cases to New Jersey. Who would have thought? That's an incredible thing. By 3? Wow. Amazing. All right. I'm out of time. You can hit my music. It has been a fun day. So like I said, UFC back this weekend. There's a lot going on this weekend, by the way. Ryzen has a great show, and they've got that champion versus champion fight headlining the bill. Frey against Hamasaki 2 LFA. CES, the return of Nick Newell, first time in around 11 months that we see him back. Cage Warriors back as well. A lot going on, as always, in the world of mixed martial arts. Again, thank you to everyone who bought tickets. I really appreciate it. That's June 7th, Chicago, next week. We are getting it done. Of course, we're back next week with our same usual show, but for now, we shall say goodbye. I want to thank all our guests. I want to thank everyone who stopped by. Thank you very much to Anthony Smith, Makwan Amirkhani, Glover Teixeira, Patty Houlihan, Ally Quinta, Alexander Gustafson, and the one and only Max Holloway. Back next week, same time and place. If you missed anything, please do check it out. YouTube, iTunes, Twitter, the app, all those places and more. All right, talk to you next week. Go Raptors. Peace. I'm out of here.